Call the September 13th meeting of Ways and Means to order.
Look at this.
Can I get approval of the minutes of the August 9th and August 16th meeting?
So moved.
Second?
I'm sorry.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution number 11, requesting enactment of an assembly bill for special law in relation to hotel and motel occupancy tax. Can I get a motion?
I'll move for discussion.
Second?
A second.
Discussion? Say it, Mullins.
I mean, we still have one more meeting, I think, and then we're pretty close to, I think, having a lot of agreement on putting something forward. I talked to Chris again today.
Right here.
Oh, no, we just...
He's not here.
No.
That I can say.
He's with Chris. Oh, okay, he still feels very confident, it sounds like that. It's able to, I don't know if the chair talked to him, but that we're able to separate and focus on short-term rentals. But I guess for now, we postpone another month, I think.
Would you mind sharing, because I know at one point when you were talking about it, it was very important to you, the inclusion of the hotels and motels. Like, let us know, like, what prompted the idea?
No, that's why I set it up the way I did. From the very beginning, I actually sat down with the Lodging Coalition the first couple of weeks it was put out and told them that I can't speak for anyone but myself. And I think it was the chair who was, even last meeting, said she still would like to see hotel motel included. But I separated them in the writing of the resolution because I was never as focused as I am on short-term rentals. And we did have a great conversation where I think Tom Corcoran really hammered home what my overall goal was here, and that was to significantly raise the short-term rental tax share with the municipalities so that they could then regulate. And what Marlboro, and I hope more towns are going to do, is focus on owner-occupied. Once you mandate that, I mean, Marlboro is actually going to Airbnbs that are not owned by people in Marlboro and forcing them to sell them by not allowing them to operate. Then that, and he said all five houses that they've done recently have been put on the market. Now local families are living there. When we talk about affordable housing, the low-hanging fruit is short-term rentals, raising the bed tax, sharing it with the municipalities, because the difficulties really is in enforcement. There may even be litigation down the road that they may need to deal with that I don't think Marlboro has dealt much with. But when you talk about people from Florida, New Jersey, New York City owning 20 apartments or homes, and every one of them is short-term rented, our housing stock nothing is affecting, in my opinion, our housing stock. 5%, I think, I've seen numbers of, is short-term rental, like short-term rentals. So this does nothing but enrich people that live here, take money from wealthy people that don't live here, and open up, if done right by the municipalities, opens up hundreds and maybe even thousands of units to live in almost overnight if we're successful doing it. And I think that's why there's all the agreement on this approach.
I agree with everything Legislator Maloney said, but I would like to add further that I think there is some, I don't want to say consensus, but there's definitely an appetite, I think, among some of us to address the disparity in the hotel-motel rate compared to neighboring counties. I think I speak for myself, I would like to see us come to parity with neighboring counties and then do what Legislator Maloney describes on the Airbnb side. And I think, you know, still to have the conversation about what happens with the funds for the hotel motels regarding the proportion that's invested in tourism, advertising, which we already invest in, perhaps also investing in infrastructure for tourism, and then where the other allocations go. So I think, I would imagine that we'll see both, that I agree that they should be separated, but I want to address them both.
Two quick things. First of all, I think we really, and I talked about this at Economic Development the other day, we really got to be careful with being such a tourism-based, centric economic development approach where, I don't know where the people that work in tourism are going to live anymore, to be honest. I don't think we could have, I don't even know if we can handle any more tourism, to be honest with you. There's nowhere for anyone to even go. They're losing waitresses and truck drivers, and we're going to start losing manufacturing jobs soon because they can't hire people because people can't live around here. But that's one. But with regards to whether or not we decide to raise the bed tax across the board, the difference will be, one, could be almost unanimous with the short-term rental approach, and we do have to understand that. And if it's going to be very partisan if we decide to go after hotel and motels, because I think the other caucus will be, the Republican caucus will almost be a short no. So we got to decide you know, that will be, it will draw a line there, so we'll be just chasing votes amongst the larger caucus, which I don't know. I think I'd like to focus on short-term rentals, but...
Yeah, I mean, I may be in the minority here, but I do think it should be one. I think we should have a discussion about raising both, and it should be one number, the same number for short-term rentals and for the hotel motels. There's also some language that I think we need to update in the existing law related to, and not to get into it too in-depth here, but just to report back in relation to bungalows is a technical definition that is sort of old and outdated, but our current law does not tax what they call impermanent structures. And again, in my district, there's a campground that has roughly 200 permanent structures that have air conditioning and bathroom and septic. You know, they running toilets. They don't pay any bed tax because it's considered an impermanent structure. So we have to think about language, I think. And my concern about sending a whole bunch of different things up is, we can have that internal question about if we're sending 4 or 5 different bills all on the same law asking for changes, I think it just might make more sense to have one comprehensive package. It will go back to the question of support. Like, are there the numbers there for the support? And I understand that that's going to be a deeper discussion. But I think we're moving in the right direction toward getting some consensus.
Let's keep in mind, we do have one more meeting, so I don't want to keep rehashing every time. If it's something relevant tonight, great, but we also still have more meetings to go.
To be on the record, I don't think Abe was necessarily talking about it at the same time.
No, absolutely number. Not.
Yeah, you'd be no, willing to go up higher on number. One, but just even up on.
Yeah.
And if I do anything, that's what
like
I do.
Very little consensus.
No, that's what I said. I acknowledge I may be in the minority in terms of the flat one number, but I do think we should raise both.
Yeah. All right, any other discussion? Somebody want to make a motion to postpone?
I'll make a motion to postpone until next month or next week.
Well, when do we meet next for the special committee?
No, it's going to be after, so it'll be at the
make
end.
A motion we postpone this until next month.
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you. Resolution 189 establishing a policy prohibiting the housing of incarcerated individuals from outside of the county.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. Discussion? Say what?
Yeah. I have a big problem with this resolution. It starts with the title. I don't think that the support of our neighboring counties and the state is an act of of profit, that sometimes a neighboring county, their jail is full or they have to rebuild it and they need to house their people somewhere close. And that's called regionalism and support. And sometimes the state needs us to house for a little bit while they're identifying where the person needs to go. I don't think we've ever had a sheriff currently or in the past who are incarcerating for profit, and so I don't support this resolution in general, but I have a particular problem just with the title of it, that it suggests that our sheriff is incarcerating for profit.
I agree.
I'll just read a legislative
motion. First of all, it's just Paul Van Blarkum, the jail was built for profit. Anybody that was here during that time knows that we built a larger jail, and the idea was that's absolutely true, Ken. They built a larger jail, hoping to house people to make money. Sheriff Figueroa said in a meeting, and I appreciate Sheriff Figueroa getting rid of 90% of the boardings that we were doing from other counties and the state and the feds in particular. But it absolutely was for profit, and the sheriff said in several meetings recently that he believes that he saved jobs when we lost so many people being housed in the jail, that for a short time housing those people created a revenue stream. I don't, you know what, normally I don't throw things on there like that, and I'd be happy to amend the name of it, but I won't for a second sit here and listen to thinking that we were never doing this for profit. We absolutely were. It was stated recently by the sheriff himself that he was doing it to save jobs so we didn't have to lay people off. And he talked about how much the jail costs and how that revenue stream helped for a while when things were tight. The problem is, on the other side of it, is that we actually have been losing money because we're only getting $70 per person. That's one of the things this resolution does. First of all, the whole idea of a bigger jail and housing more people and having these conversations about revenue, I think, is against what a lot of us feel about what incarceration should be, especially when it turns out, I think, we're losing money. But it forces a conversation. This now is going to be a conversation every time we start boarding in people, and especially from other counties. And when there is a good reason and it is helping out another county for a short time, we get talked to about it, and it happens. But this is a county-owned piece of property. It's not the sheriff's jail, it's the people's jail, and we're fund appropriators. I think it's completely appropriate for us to have a policy that mandates a conversation, both for moral reasons and for budgetary reasons to have that conversation. I think it makes a lot of sense. And the last thing I hope everyone realizes, and I talk probably more COs than anybody, but the COs like this. I was asked by the sheriff if I was putting this up on behalf of the COs, because he was concerned that would be outside the bargaining process or something for their union. But I wasn't asked to. What I had heard for many years is the boarding of these inmates at the us. There's so much mandated overtime that these people, and we are losing people. I mean, a man died a year ago at the jail on duty. These guys are, and women, are so overworked and so taxed, 3 and 4 doubles a week for years. Ask any of them. 3 and 4 double holidays, they're so far gone, and part of it is driven by these outboardings. And also, a lot of the state people we were getting, there was a lot of gang activity and a lot more stuff that these COs were dealing with. And after talking to the COs, that's what drove me. I wasn't asked to do it by the COs, but that was the reality that had me start thinking about this and looking into it. But I'm happy to change the title. We can make it bland.
Legislator, you should tell.
So just to clarify for everyone, this resolution has been heavily amended in law enforcement and public safety from its original version in order to allow for specifically the examples that Legislator Walter mentioned regarding being able to house people compassionately because the jail in a neighboring county is not, you know, inhabitable. There are also... so. We essentially removed the prohibition against the board-ins and allow it entirely and merely mandate that within 30 days of a board-in entering the jail, the sheriff provides us with a set of information regarding that. We do have a prohibition against federal board-ins, except we've added a number of exceptions to that, which under the by the powers of the sheriff to determine whether it's a issue of public safety, if it's an issue of the safety of the person who's incarcerated, perhaps they need to be moved from a facility where they're, you know, they're an informant, they're not safe because they're, you know, housed with the people they've informed regarding. So there's a lot of leeway here, perhaps so much so that the title no longer fits it because we have changed the resolution so much to make it address the concerns that Legislator Walter shared.
Thank you. Legislator Cahill?
Thank you. I was here when they built the jail, and when they came to us, they requested an additional pod to bring in, boarded in, inmates from other places at the request of these other places, which was my second point. This is not something that the county went out and solicited. Other counties were coming to us at the time, Dutchess County, Greene County specifically. They had no capacity at the time. And they were coming to us to use that space, right? We didn't go out and say, hey, we got all these jail cells, everybody come on in and, you know, we'll make a lot of money off it. That's just not how it happened. And it's a misrepresentation of what happened. People are saying that we are out there soliciting or doing something for profit, because that's not what happened. We did, in fact, board in inmates from other counties and from state temporarily, and I think at one point we even did federal prisoners for a short period of time, right? And but my point is that in my recollection, right, and it was a long time ago, but in my recollection, this was never set in a way for profit, right? It was never set or designed to do anything for profit. It was other counties came to us, and we accommodated them, as good neighbors will in circumstances like that.
Chair Rittels.
Thank you. So I really appreciate the reporting aspect that was added, and I know that we probably get this information in the annual report, but seeing it specifically as an isolated report, I think would be very helpful. I have not yet been able to speak to the sheriff. I'm very curious about the prohibition on the federal board in a federal corrections facility people, in that I don't know how many we're currently boarding in. I don't know how meaningful the compromise is in terms of what a real effect it actually has. So that's something before moving forward that I would be really interested to get some detail on.
Legislator Rock?
I mean, if Legislator Uchtel has information to Legislator Bartel's point, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, so the way that we got this resolution unstalled was through meeting with the sheriff. So we sat down with him at the law enforcement center a few weeks ago, came to a couple of compromises. That was when I came on as a sponsor, as we made those changes and then amended it formally in committee last week. And the compromise around reporting for county wardens was one that was, you know, hard fought but not too controversial. The one around federal, I think he was a little bit less comfortable about that, but we were able to bring him around. And I encourage you to speak with him. I don't mean to speak for him entirely, but it was through conversation with him that we added the variety of exceptions. And, you know, for example, there was an instance where there were New York City incarceries that had to travel to Albany. There was a snowstorm. They had to stop for overnight in Ulster County because it wasn't safe to be on the roads. That is an example of something that was done for the safety of the inmates. That specifically is now exempted as something that the sheriff has a determination to do. He does not need to come to us in order to act on that beforehand. And that's how we were able to, it was through collaboration with him that we were able to make these changes.
Thanks. I mean, you know, first off, I agree that I think the title definitely needs to change. You know, I mean, at this point, it's a policy requiring reporting regarding, you know, incarcerated individuals boarded into the county or something along those lines. It's not prohibiting that. You know, and I take a little bit of, you know, I shouldn't say take. I disagree with the assertion that the boardens are what's causing the overtime and the, you know, mandated shifts and whatnot. The mandated shifts and overtime is because it's really hard to hire corrections officers right now. You know, there's staffing problems everywhere, and when you're dealing with people who have to deal with the incarcerated every day and get spit on and have stuff thrown at them, it's a hard, you know, job to fill in the first place. And in this jobs market, I think it's becoming even harder. So, I would have said a lot more, but Legislator Cahill took a lot of the words I was going to say right out of my mouth when it comes to, you know, the reason that the jail was built. And, you know, quite frankly, the staffing is mandated by the State Commission on Corrections. It's not something that we can change based on whether or not we're boarding in people. We can go back to them and ask for it to be lowered, but when you, you know, if you do that and then you end up having to raise it again, you know, it's going to be a long time before they lower it again. So.
Quick point of order on two things that were said in reference to things that I said. Mr. Cahill said before is exactly what I heard, that there was an opportunity, that there was a surrounding counties that did not have room. Mm-hmm. The idea that we would have built something thinking we could then go out and advertise, hey, we have extra room here. No, they knew when they were building the jail that there was an opportunity to house outside. And the people I spoke to, many that were involved, it was never out of the goodness of our heart to help out Dutchess County. It was an opportunity for a revenue stream. But it's exactly
a dart pot.
Exactly. The dart pot, yeah. Exactly. I was just going to say, you know, to counter if I may.
Real quick on the COs, absolutely. We just, the last couple of weeks, we've had psych ward visits and everything else from Greene County residents that resulted in overtime, absolutely resulting in overtime. I hear from these COs, there's five or six of them I talk to on a weekly basis, absolutely causing overtime in the jail, mandatory overtime.
Thank you. So a couple of things. I'm a little conflicted in this resolution. Where the one whereas says the revenue fee generated from boarding out of county incarceration, county incarceration does not necessarily cover transporting, feeding, or accrued overtime costs incurred, which means that we're losing money.
That's the craziness.
And it's not for, well then, why is it for profit?
That's my point.
You know, the next thing says that a model of incarceration for a profit approach. So this goes back to my good neighbor statement, because if we're not making money, then we're being good neighbors, right? Should we lose money? No, we shouldn't, right? We should help a neighbor when they need help. And if they're coming to us, if we have excess capacity and they need help, then we should be helping them. This is, you know, a bigger picture thing here, right, in my view, right? And I just want to clarify about the pod. You know, I think, was there four pods in the jail now? Is there four pods? And we were going to build a fifth one. They suggested, a specific legislator suggested and argued over and over again, to build one specifically to board in inmates from other places, federal, immigration, state, anything they could get their hands on, just to generate revenue. And if, at that point, we rejected that flatly, the legislature did, and it never happened. So just want to make that clear.
All right, follow up. You should tell Walter Ronk.
So just to clarify, I should have mentioned this before, but one of the reporting requirements isn't just to tell us if there is anticipated overtime, but also to tell us the prior 3 months of overtime, which I think is a good thing for us to be looking at because of the reasons that Legislator Maloney shared. But personally, my support for this is not coming from the overtime perspective, but I would like us to get to the bottom of the data. I've submitted resolutions on specifically data collection in the past, and so that was why I was eager to include the last 3 months of overtime, because it's, you know, we talk about a lot of stuff, but to collect the data is a different thing, and this does that.
Thanks. So, first of all, back to the idea of other counties knowing that we were going to build this jail and have the space. This was also a time when many other counties recognized that their jails were not okay and were going to need to be renovated too. So if they were knowing about it, it was because this, I guess many of these jails were built at the same time, so they all started deteriorating or not working. Plus, we also, this was a time where we over-incarcerated for a while, and so everybody was very full. So again, back to supporting the idea that this is a good neighbor and we need to. I think that that's point one. Point two, we have heard that there's issues with staffing. There's many, many nuances to it, including the sheriff using their, and everyone there using their discretion, how to separate people there, you know, and then you have to have a certain number of staff on that. And so it's a complicated thing, and I think it needs to be pulled away from this resolution, because that's its own issue that has to be sorted out on whether they have the necessary staff to do the right thing to keep everyone safe. The next thing is, we can have monthly reports. I mean, you can request. I used to see on the Criminal Justice Council a monthly report of everyone who was in the jail and what they were in there for. And so, you know, there's no reason why you can't have it. That's how I learned that the parole reporting station going away increased our jail population, is I saw a monthly report that said, why did we go up so high this month all of a sudden? And it was because that was when we moved it. So you can ask for it. If you want a whole separate policy to ask for data, you could do it, but you can also ask. The last thing I'll say is the edits basically say you can't do this except at the discretion of the sheriff. Well, right now, it's at the discretion of the sheriff. And so there's nothing to add. The sheriff uses his discretion as to who the right people are and when it's right to bring them in. So we don't need a resolution telling the sheriff to do his job. He's doing it already. And so I just don't see any point in any of this, although I'm happy for a later conversation about making sure that the staffing is necessary so these COs aren't feeling overwhelmed and overworked, because that's an important issue, but it's a separate issue.
After Legislator Walter said that, I agree with everything that she said, so I'm just going to leave one up like that.
I'd actually, if the committee would entertain it, I'd like the week to speak to the sheriff, because I haven't spoken to the sheriff.
Oh, I forgot. And I did speak to the sheriff, so you know. And and he basically, he agreed to the discretionary language because he felt otherwise it wouldn't, you know, he was a, he's not supportive of this. He was okay. He agreed to that, only thinking that if it is going to pass, he wants to make sure he has the full discretion, which he already has. But he's not a fan.
Okay. Yeah, I'd just like to talk to him. I mean, I'm particularly interested in federal corrections board ends and how often that's happening and, you know, what that means and what the picture of that looked like over a period of time. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm sorry, I haven't been able to do that before today. So, I would just like the week to postpone it, if that's okay.
Forcefully.
Pleasure to be.
Yeah, it does prohibit, and it's federal inmates. And when you make a policy that you're going to get immediate information, it's a balance. It's checks and balances to a point that we just don't look into everything. There's 23 of us. It requires us to stay in tune to what is going on over at that jail, our jail, the people's jail, not the sheriff's jail, a county-owned piece of property, and. We did intend to make money off of other counties. If you want to say it's a good neighbor, that's just bizarre to me that we would build a jail and have a bigger jail to be a good neighbor to other counties. And then there is a prohibition, so it actually is far more than just reporting. And Sheriff Figueroa won't always be here, just like Sheriff Van Blarkum wasn't always here. And if we had this policy while Sheriff Van Blarkum was here, the jail would have looked a lot different. And I just don't think that we ultimately should be that loose and fast with opening up our jail to outside, especially when it was intended, and a lot of people intended it to make money. And then what does government do? Where they thought the jail was a disaster to build and for a lot of different reasons. And then they screw it up and lose money on it as we're being a good neighbor. The idea was to make money. We end up bringing in all these people, and we ultimately lose money while doing it. That's government for you. I'd like a little more oversight, and I haven't heard one good reason why we would have federal inmates in here. And when they were, it was not good. Not good for our COs, not good for our taxpayers, and it affected our overall approach to incarceration. So I stand by everything but the title, and, you know, I don't know if it matters all that much what the sheriff thinks of it, because it's a county-owned piece of property, and we're the fund appropriators and the policymakers.
Thanks. I mean, you know, Legislator Maloney, I believe, just said that if, you know, this policy were here when Sheriff Van Blarkum were here, the jail would look different. I disagree with that, because Sheriff Van Blarkum wasn't elected until after the jail was built. You know, he wasn't, you know, the sheriff during the building or planning
the
jail.
While he was here is basically what I meant.
Okay. That's not the way I took it, but fair enough. You know, we were getting more money per inmate maybe 10 years ago when there were less, you know, larger jails. Dutchess County had to spend, you know, what, $30, $40 million to build their jail. It was more than that, actually. Yeah, because theirs is bigger than ours, 100, whatever it was. I'm not a Dutchess County legislator. But, you know, we were boarding in a lot from Dutchess County, a lot from Greene County. Now the price, I'm sure, is much lower because, you know, the laws of supply and demand work with, you know, with this, too. When there's a larger need, there's a larger cost. When there's a lower need, there's a lower cost. So, you know, I want to say emphatically, we're never profiting because the amount of board-ins never exceeded the amount of money that we're spending on bonding for the jail and everything else. You know, it definitely offsets some of the costs because you have to have a certain number of COs on no matter what. You know, you have to staff the pods that are there, and you have to have more than one pod because back then, before it raised the age, you had to have a juvenile pod, you have to have a male pod and a female, at least one male pod, a female pod, and I'm pretty sure that the other one is for larger offenders.
Mental health.
What's that?
Mental health.
And mental health.
Yeah. How much are we getting per inmate?
How much were we getting?
No, how much are we now? And how much were we?
All right, well, let's
good question through the chair.
Hold on.
I want to say that at its peak, it was 110 an inmate.
Yeah. Yes, and you don't know how much we're getting now?
I don't.
Well, if we had this policy, you would know.
Again, I'm not against.
Well, we can find out.
Exactly.
I'm not against reporting. I'm just saying. I'm telling you. I want to say it was between 100 and 710 back then. And we did. We talked about it a lot back then. It sounds an awful lot like something that the law enforcement committee should be looking at, which I'm sure you are. So.
Well, it did pass the law enforcement committee unanimously, and I appreciate the Ways and Means Committee speaking about the cost. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, we got it. But again, you know, it may have passed the law enforcement committee unanimously, but the header said, you know, the title of it still says, the no more, incarceration for profit, and prohibiting the housing of incarcerated individuals transferred from facilities outside of Ulster County, and then the body of the resolution now says,
You can do it now.
It's fine. The body has absolutely nothing to do with the title anymore.
That's totally not accurate.
Legislative Arch.
Thank you.
Sorry, Legislative Cahill.
Thank you. So, the resolve, the second to last resolve says, transfer of incarcerated individuals from federal correction facilities or individuals in federal custody to the Ulster County Jail is hereby prohibited unless such a transfer is mandated by New York State Commission of Correction, a court of competent jurisdiction required by a national or regional emergency for the safety of incarcerated individual, for the safety of the general public, as determined by the Ulster County Sheriff, except as otherwise provided by state and federal law. So that tells me that there are more loopholes in that than there are things that would prohibit the people from being sent to the jail. And the sheriff, in the end, has the ultimate authority to whether or not people will be accepted in the jail from any program. Because it says, as determined by the Ulster County Sheriff. So for me, I don't know what this does. I would rather just see this called, a jail population reporting system. Because that's, what it is, right? A reporting system to tell us how many people are boarded in the jail at any given time. Everything else is soft. It's got holes in it, in my opinion.
Is that your promise, not hard?
Chair Bartels.
So, I think there are holes, and I'm hearing that the holes came about as a compromise, but it certainly does something. I mean, it begins by saying federal correction facility inmates can't be transferred here except in these extraordinary circumstances.
Doesn't say extraordinary.
Well, I would say that the list is extraordinary. And to Legislator Maloney's earlier point, I value a report and a required report against having to ask, because having to ask, it's when it pops up and what's when it comes up in my mind, and then I need to reach out, and then it gets added to this pile, versus I know I'm going to get this on a regular basis and be looking at it on a regular basis. So I think that's valuable. In wanting to talk to the sheriff, it's in part to hear what he thinks about it, and I appreciate hearing from the both of you what he thought about it, but it's also to I'm curious about the numbers of federal corrections facilities people who are coming currently. Like, I just want to get a gauge of what this actually will have an impact on. And, it gives me a certain level of, like, flashback anxiety to even have conversations about the construction of the jail, because I think so many things were ill-conceived and ill-executed. And here we are still. We'll be paying this jail off when its useful life is over. We had a leaky roof from day one that we weren't told about until 20 years later, and now we're going to, have to get a new roof, which we would have been under warranty, and that's just one of a thousand things about this overbuilt jail that is going to continue to haunt us. I'm open to moving this, but I do just want to say I want the week to talk to the sheriff to really understand what it meaningfully will impact.
There's no federal inmates right now.
No, that's okay, but I want to know what a year might look like, or I don't know. I have no point of reference.
Away from that.
Through the chair to legislature, you should tell, it came out during my last comments that he said that it was completely false, that I said that the title no longer has to do with what's in the content of the resolution. I'll ask this question to legislature, you should tell through you, Mr. Chairman. If the Greene County Sheriff reaches out to Sheriff Figueroa you know, hey, I need a place to put 10 inmates, is he prohibited from accepting them?
I meant, if you'd like.
Yeah, so the purpose of this legislation is, to the title's point, even though I'm totally open to amending the title, is to prohibit or to legislate around the area of incarceration for profit. When the Greene County Sheriff reaches out to us to ask us to house inmates that can't be housed there, it's a compassionate thing for us to accept them. And it was when that was amended to allow that was when I became a supporter of this legislation. So it has been amended to address all of the concerns that folks had. Apparently, now the concern is that it's been amended too much. So, you know, yes, it no longer has the prohibitions because of the compassionate component around local, let's say, neighboring counties. It's the neighborly thing to do. And for federal, it does prohibit it. There is no justification, even if determined by the sheriff, around a for-profit incarceration of a federal inmate. It would only be for reasons of safety. And whether it's the safety of the individual or there's, you know, a storm and they need to stop here and spend the night or whatever it is, that is, you know, these are the amendments that we've made. I think perhaps if the lesson here is, you know, if legislation is too complicated, that we should account for all of the reasons why it might be, you know, addressed in a different way and the amendments might weaken it enough, then, you know, perhaps we should all pack up and go home and, you know, pass one-page amendments that don't address all of these externalities. I'm trying to get something through that actually captures the spirit of what I am hearing in this room, which is that we don't want incarceration for profit. If there's incarceration on a compassionate, you know, standpoint where there's a neighboring county, as Minority Leader Ronk just mentioned, that is something that we would be able to do. So in answer to your question, yes.
I disagree that it was for profit to begin with. I mean, it sounds like a good soundbite. And again, the title creates the soundbite for you, which is one of my problems with the title after all of these amendments. I had a problem with the title before the amendments. I have a bigger problem with the title after the amendments, because at least before, you were prohibiting things. Now we're not prohibiting anything except for federal inmates, and then sort of not so much. You know, I believe from the beginning, and I'll tell a story about former Sheriff Van Blarkum, because I feel like he's been getting a little bit of the brunt of the for-profit conversation here. There was a time when Tom Cajun came in to the Law Enforcement Committee and said, I took a look because of the Criminal Justice Council that he was on, and, you know, we seem to have a disproportionate amount of state parole violators that are in our prison for longer than there are in other prisons, other county jails. You know, parole violation, you're supposed to go back to state prison, but ours were being in our jail for 60, 90 days. Sheriff Van Barkum went down, looked at it, and it was all parole violators who were being held on $25 or $50 bail for the Pettit larceny or whatever, and it was one specific city judge who was putting these ridiculous bails down. He went down and bailed five or six out of them on his credit card, and then went back to state prison to save the county money. So, again, to me, it's not about profit. It's about, you know, filling a gap that, you know, we have to staff these pods at a certain level to begin with. At some point, you're just, you know, helping the county recoup some of the funds that we're already spending. There's no profit involved. That's the problem I have is the word profit, because I don't believe, again, it's a great soundbite. I wish I had soundbites like that about the things I believe in. But, you know, it doesn't present with reality.
Sure. I'm fine changing the title. We've amended it to a point where the title can certainly be changed. And you keep talking about it's not about profit. And 10 minutes ago, you were talking about supply and demand. So I don't know how it's not about profit when you're talking about supply and demand. But was meant to be. Two legislators early on said it was never about housing. The jail was never built, and considerations weren't made about housing, and then we heard it was absolutely about, we did consider it while we were building the jail, to the point where we even considered it, making it even bigger. But it wasn't considered.
Come on.
Mr. Cagle, you just got done telling us it was a fifth.
Yeah.
If he's going to mumble and shake his head,
Now let's finish your statement.
I heard we built a bigger jail. We absolutely did, because we had requests from other counties to be good neighbors. That's not the way I had heard from jail officials that it was to be a good neighbor. We absolutely built the jail bigger, knowing we were going to be housing out of county. Is that false? No. And there was even talk that there was going to be, it was, if that one legislator wanted to build it 20% bigger to house even more. So absolutely the jail was built in mind bigger to house out of county. We've got to the point where we want to get away from it. So,
Fitzley Walker.
Yeah, so if we are postponing it, I would like, it would be who the two people who are sponsoring this to agree whether they think that it, the title is correct or not, because I just heard completely opposite things. One was the title's exactly right, and the other one is the title doesn't need to be there. I'd also like, if we're postponing it, it sounds like I know all the things that are allowed, but I'm not sure what then is the definition of the for-profit. And because if you're gonna prohibit it, then how do you enforce it? So I would want to see, how are you defining exactly what a for-profit housing is, so that we can look at that. Because I have a long list of what things are allowed now, but I'm not quite clear what the for-profit housing is. And so if postponed in a week, please agree on what you want the title to be, and please provide a definition of what for-profit housing is, so that we know what we're voting on.
We'll be happy to change the title.
Yes,
obviously,
agree,
it's very confusing that the idea that this was initially, this jail was built, and the actual action of bringing in these out-of-county boardings was initially for-profit. That's how we got into this. That's why our county seems to have been doing more of that over the years. That language is obviously very confusing, so we're going to make it less confusing.
And the second thing is to please define what for-profit housing is.
Well, we're changing our
language. Take it out. You don't need to.
Well, that's not what the other sponsor said.
For point of order, I did say earlier that I'm fine with changing the title, and I understand that it can be attractive to seize on my response to Legislator Ronk when he asked me to explain why the title was originally
it's
there.
It's not attractive. You said the only thing that this is enforcing or prohibiting is for-profit housing. And so I'm saying I would like to just be clear what for-profit housing is.
Federal.
And if that's, but it's not all federal, it's some federal, so I'm just asking for a clear definition of what for-profit housing is.
Just to get us to the finish line, if possibly, if it was profit was things other than for safety.
Yeah, I don't need it now. I'm just saying by next week, I'd like to know what the definition
of
for-profit is.
Next week, then.
I got nothing else.
Okay.
Can I just, just as it just popped into my brain, I'm going to say it out loud. Maybe establishing a policy prohibiting the board-in of federal prisoners and requiring the reporting of all board-ins. Something like that.
That's not all federal.
Doesn't prohibit all federal board-ins.
Prohibiting the board-in of federal prohibit.
But it doesn't.
With exceptions. We have prohibitions that have exceptions in our
rules. Well, they'll figure it out.
Okay, so whatever.
Well, frankly,
if
it's not making it out of this committee, I don't want to do another round of work on this, because I've been working pretty hard on this. So.
I oppose the postponement just because I'd like to vote no tonight, but.
I thought you were going to give me the week.
You'll get it from everybody else. After the conversation, kind of like Abe said, you know, if I'm not going to support it next week, why am I going to postpone it?
Well, I wasn't asking you.
I'm not going to support it next week.
I would like the week, please. I'd like to make a motion to postpone
just
for
you,
one
before
week.
Before you do, let me just ask you a question.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So, either of the three sponsors that are here, if you'd like to answer it for me, to you, is the assertion in any way that people are being incarcerated because we are making money off of them? Is that what's being asserted in any way, shape, or form here?
No.
Legislator, you should tell you, you're not saying anything, and that's concerning.
No, I think the assertion was that, like, the example that Legislator Maloney shared, that the Bordens helped with our budget problem, would certainly imply that the intent is for profit, but then the example goes on further to say that we actually were losing money on it. So clearly for profit is problematic and we can remove that, you know, that's...
To be clear, we are not... Nobody is being kept in incarceration longer than they need to be because we are making money. That's nobody's claim here, correct?
No.
Okay. So these are people who have been presumably legally incarcerated by a judge or jury, and they have to go somewhere, correct?
Well, there's a specific place they have to go.
Yes, they have to go somewhere.
To their county jail, usually.
Okay.
Federal institution.
There's no space available at Dutchess County Jail.
Jesus.
First of all, that's the...
I'm making a presumption.
But I think that's a great point that has to be made. I mean, right now, we could have Greene County inmates here because Greene County doesn't want to run overtime, and we're willing to.
Okay. So, to that point, my understanding, and this will come in next week when the sheriff is here, but I remember a conversation last year where he still had the same staffing, and the question came up of why, and I think Shiraga is the one who actually said it again. There's minimum staffing requirements based on pods. Mm-hmm. So how could we have unnecessary overtime if we have to have these staff there anyway? So I don't understand you.
Transportation, visits to the mental health facilities, psych visits, things like that. And you also have some of these inmates that we're getting that are, I mean, I worked in the state with disabled adults. We call them one-on-ones. They have a different term in the jail. So we'll get somebody in here that's so, I mean, high maintenance, for lack of a better phrase, and we'll actually have to assign one person from our jail to that one person.
I mean, you have the statistics of those, that's why you're...
Do I have all those statistics? No, I just gave you examples of ways that we run overtime.
Okay, but that's...
Even though we're not extending the size of said pod.
But that's what I'm saying. I think Chief Bartel was also saying, how many federal inmates have we dealt with? I guess you're bringing a resolution forward, but I'm hearing a whole lot of conjecture of, well, we're losing money, we're not losing money, we built it for profit, we're not... Where is... I mean, to channel, you know, one of our legislators here, Legislator Nolan, asks all the time, show me the money. Where is the proof? Where is that documented? I'd like to see that this is actually... we're losing money and it's a problem. So if we could have that for next week to any of the sponsors... that would be great, and maybe the sheriff himself can give us that information. But if it really exists, I'd like to see that.
Unless it's exactly down to the penny, every time we bring someone in, we're either going to lose money or make money. It'll either be a revenue stream or it won't. The ultimate point here was we don't like the approach of having a bigger jail, of being for rent, bringing in for a million other reasons that we just named, some of which are running overtime that other jails aren't. We need to have that conversation. It's not an approach many of us like. It's very simple. I don't understand. We can go line by line with four of the things you just said, and we could answer them. But, I mean, and we have. And then you just, I mean, obviously, look, if you want our jail to house individuals from other counties and federal inmates, let's just say it. I mean, if you don't, I mean, I don't know what you want from us at this point. I mean, we've said our approach. We don't want to house inmates unless there really is a reason, unless Greene County's in a jam. And we know they're in a jam. But this, some of the requirements that we're asking for the sheriff to report, we'll be able to figure out with what we're hearing whether or not Greene County just doesn't want to run overtime, and we do. And we'll also be able to say, wait a minute, $70 to... supply and demand point over there, $70, does that cover what we're doing? It either does or it doesn't. We're either making money or we're losing money. I certainly don't want to be losing money, but do not forget the approach here that started many years ago was to have more space in the jail to house other... No one's arguing about that. Well, you admitted that. What we're disagreeing on is whether or not it was for profit.
Okay. You never said that. I said that there was proposals to build a fifth pod on the jail for profit that was soundly rejected by the legislature. I never said
an even bigger.
No, I didn't say that. I said that there was a proposal to build an even bigger jail to house inmates for profit that was soundly rejected by the legislature at the time. That's the fact. That is the fact.
Pod.
a fifth pod to house.
We absolutely built a jail that was bigger than we needed to build.
Based on projections. Based on projections of what was going to happen in 10 or 15 or 20 years. That's what that was based on, not on anything to do with profit. Okay? I have
four. You're up.
Okay. So the other thing I want to ask about is this supposition that the county is accepting people from Greene County to avoid, so Greene County avoids overtime. Do you have anything to prove that? Do you have anything?
To the chair, did I say
question.
That as a fact, or did I say it as something as
you said
a
it multiple times.
You should know that. No, how do we know? Shouldn't we know? Because that's not being a good neighbor, is it? I represent the people of Ulster County, not Greene County.
Me too.
Okay.
So does the sheriff.
Chair Barton.
Right, exactly.
Thank you. Can I ask through you to the clerk?
Yeah.
Can I ask the clerk, can you reach out to the sheriff and ask for a 3-year Borden report?
Yes.
Thank you. And then maybe just circulate it to the whole committee. Well, I think that would just help.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just one final thing on that. And if the sheriff is knowingly, right, bringing in inmates from another county so they can avoid overtime.
Oh, please. I did not.
Well,
yes,
that's
not.
Your insinuation, is that that's
absolutely
what's happening.
Not.
Legislator Maloney.
Legislator
Maloney. Legislator Kahle's the floor, then yeah. Legislator Ronk, then Chair Bartels.
Yeah, I mean, so that's all I have to
say.
Well, point
of order, then, to respond to what he just said, what that I insinuated.
There's no point in respond.
No, no, no. He just said I insinuated something. Robert's Rules of Order, I have the right to respond.
Right. So the point I was making was that multiple times you stated that Greene County was sending people to Ulster County to avoid overtime in their jail.
Does anyone else here think that you hear me say as an absolute fact that I believe Greene County is sending people here because I know that they don't want to run overtime. It was another example of a reason we should do due diligence, because how do we know?
But I guess that's his point, is you did say that several times, and it sounded emphatic to the point where it almost sounded as fact. I think that's the issue here.
Chair, did you take it as a fact that I was saying, hey, Greene County is not running overtime, and we are, and that's why we're taking these inmates? You took that as a fact?
I did think that's what you were saying. I mean, I thought you were saying that as an example of why.
You did not think I meant it as a possibility.
I knew you meant it as a hypothetical. I wouldn't have said it that way. And I.
How did you know?
I make a motion?
Yes, you made a motion. It needs to be seconded.
Someone second.
I will second.
Well, I'm sorry, we jumped in front of you.
That's fine. Legislator Cahill, once again, took a lot of my points. I just want, for the record, I also thought that it was that was stated as a supposition, more than a fact, I would say, but I'm not sure that 75% of what's been said here is a fact. I think most of it's suppositions and hearsay.
All right, we have a second.
Can we have the minutes?
All those in favor?
My exact quote from the individual statement.
Only for Legislator Bartels.
Okay. Opposed? You're opposed to it. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Even Eve didn't do it for you, Trace.
Because nothing is going to change my mind. So,
well, thank you.
At the request of the exec's office, I'd like to get a motion to postpone for 1 month the resolutions 308, 309, and 310.
With pleasure.
I'll make a motion to block 309.
Yes, motion. Second.
Second. Block.
For what favor?
The block.
I'll support the block.
Okay. Opposed. Now, motion to postpone 1 month.
I'll move it.
I will second it.
Discussion?
I'm against the postponement. I respect where they're coming from. I don't think that the executive's office is asking for a postponement because they think that this isn't the way we should go. I think that they're seeing their writing on the wall and are going to look for other options, but other options are going to put us farther and farther behind and are disrespectful to our dispatchers. And in honor of our dispatchers who are working hard every day, I interact with them on a daily basis, I'm going to be a no.
I just resent the fact that it's disrespectful. This has been going on for 20 years. 20 years we've been talking about this. I talked to a former legislator today about this, and he said 4 or 5 years ago, he said, I thought we were just about to do that. I remember I thought Mike kept talking about it. We were just about to build it. I mean, and we just keep kicking a can down the road. Now we get to a point where we're going to buy a 50-acre brownfield for $4 million. Not a lot of it makes sense. and all of a sudden we're the bad guys for holding it up. How about that appraisal? This started with Golden Hill, that conversation, where we're letting these developers tell us what we need to pay or sell or give away a piece of property. Thank God, because of what happened at Golden Hill, the chair went and got this appraisal, and it comes back that alarmingly low, and we just move on. We just move on after almost giving an individual with those kinds of relationships to the county $4 million for a piece of property that wasn't even on the market. It really, shady shades. The nonsense continues, and I'm going to be told by the outgoing executive and you that it's disrespectful. I'll tell you what's disrespectful, the $4 million price tag with no appraisal of our own. That's disrespectful to the taxpayer.
Thanks. It's less than $4 million. That's a falsehood. I mean, right there, you know, you're already, you know, the legislative Maloney is already, you know, exaggerating the price upwards of what's in the resolution. I will say that I find a lot of problems with the second appraisal, including the comparables. I think are ridiculous. Anybody who looks at them, they're not local, super local, and you know they're quite frankly from before property increased in price by 20-30% or more. And I can tell you from my own personal, my house appraised for, you know, almost 25% higher, you know, in the same time frame as the comparable, actually a little bit later than the comparables that were given on the second appraisal. And I'm sure comparables are hard to find, which is the answer that I got from some legislators when I pointed out the fact that the comparables made absolutely no sense to use in an appraisal on a property today. They're all pre-COVID. And while not a lot of big commercial properties have sold, you know, to use as comparables, well, that's not a reason to, you know, trust comparables from that long ago, from when property was a lot cheaper. I stand by my statement. I think that, you know, no matter how long other people have been kicking the can down the road, I don't think that we should continue to kick the can. That's not an excuse or a reason to continue to kick the can down the road. And we're to the point now where we're having, you know, catastrophic failures at our 911 center that we weren't having, you know, 10 years ago when this should have probably happened. So, you know, the time is now to move. The longer we push this process down the road, the longer it's going to be until the shovel's in the ground, and the longer it's going to be until we have a solution for the dispatchers. And quite frankly, for the emergency services professionals around the county that also suffer from the size of the 911 center that suffer from the equipment problems and the trunk line failures and everything else that goes along with the current location.
I just want to clarify that the first appraisal that we got that came in at 4.3 was done through the county and not through a developer. And so there are differences in the comparables. The second appraisal looked at warehouse space and other things. Didn't take any increases over time. I am not comfortable with just looking at the second appraisal. The reason we're asking for a month, though, just to clarify, and I believe a month will be enough time. We're looking at a couple other properties, and we want to send over a package that you all can decide on. We're going to include the 1.8 for Paradise Lane as one of the options because we still believe it is a good value. And then we are going to include a couple other sites that are currently on the market. And I also need time to meet with legislative council and with the director of planning and county attorney to resolve some of the other resolutions that are in this block. So.
All right. Chair Bartels.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was going to respond to some of Legislator Ronk's points, but just in relation to the comparables, I don't have them in front of me, but I know that in the first appraisal, which was done by the county, in the first appraisal, the majority of the comps were from the same period of time that the second appraisal was done from, that the market change in the market before and after COVID has to do with residential real estate, and lastly, that the lowest comp in the first appraisal was much more in line with the second appraisals and numbers. So even though the numbers are very far, it's not such a radical anomaly. You know, I think it was critically important that we got a second appraisal, and I don't know the firm. I didn't speak to the firm. I provided information via via email, and it was the second independent look. And it's, and I have since learned, both through personal work but through speaking to many people, that in the commercial world is not only not uncommon to get two appraisals, it's not uncommon to get three appraisals or more. In the commercial world, it's very different than buying a residential home, and I think it was a requirement of our due diligence. I was not, and continue not to be, quiet about the fact that I think it was way too much money to spend on a piece of property, particularly with the challenges that it had. Although I do appreciate what has been articulated to me as some of the benefits of the property. I don't want to drag our feet. I think it is important that we make a commitment and that we move this project forward. I've been here a long time, and it's been talked about over the course of my time here, but as a background issue. The previous executive, I mean, if he brought something forward, I don't recall ever him bringing something. This is the first I'm seeing a substantial effort to undertake the project, and I think it's really important that we do it. I just think it's important that we do it. We do it right. That's all.
Absolutely, Walker.
Thanks. I'll just say quickly, I'm glad to know that the comps looked prior. I mean, it's good to know also that commercial real estate isn't as impacted, but I was worried that the bubble of COVID would actually artificially inflate the value of this property, so I'm glad that didn't happen. I do know when I spoke to some realtors that bubble is actually going down, so even with residential, they're not valued at the same way that they were at the earlier days of COVID. I just want to, through the chair to the deputy executive or straight to you, you know, if you're presenting others, because that's something we've been asking all along, is rather than just keep talking about, not rather, in addition to talking about this one, why are we not exploring others, just to really, to me, environmentally and efficiently, reuse of properties that we might already own, just to either have a real reason why Golden Hill is off, or have it in that list, or any other, you know, if I'm not thinking of something else, but, you know, that we have that space, and it has been brought up by the chair of exploring it, really seeing how it could fit there, potentially, not just saying, oh, if we throw the exact same thing there, it'll cost this much, but really seeing with it as a campus, and what might be logical as a campus. Or explain why it absolutely can't be on the table. But, you know, let's finish that conversation too, please.
Sure. Perhaps we could invite Director Erickson to come and talk about the benefits of a non-Golden Hill location, because I'm sure that he could give everyone quite a few reasons.
With regards to a couple things, speed, the fact that this needs to be remediated, I don't think it's going to make it any faster. I think we've got to be careful as government with trust from the public at an all-time low when we go and try to take a property from someone that has a lot of relationships with the county that's not even on the market, that's contaminated, for a big price. I think we've got to be careful. It's probably hard to find comps of contaminated old apple orchards, to be honest. And I keep hearing how Golden Hill just won't work, and then in the next breath, but it's great for a 160-unit apartment complex, a community center, and a daycare, but no 911 center.
I felt it necessary to respond to that comment. Building housing has a lot of different requirements. First off, it's not even the same parcel, but if it were the same parcel, housing has quite a few different requirements than, you know, a 911 center. To me, the thing's it's like apples and mid-sized cars.
All right, so we have a motion, a second, to postpone for a month. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Resolution 340, funding ARPA foods, security, and access.
Motion? I'll move it.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I just want to just quick acknowledge and thank the executive side of the house for responding to the ARPA committees and others committees' concerns. It was really collaborative, and the resolution's come a long way. So.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 400 amended the 2022 budget to establish and fund the U.S. County Agricultural Crisis Relief Program. Can I have a motion?
Move it.
Chair Walsh.
Second.
Second round. Discussion.
Yeah. So, I appreciate the amount of work that Legislator Nolan has been putting into this. You know, several, just to bring people into the conversation that was in ARPA, if you weren't there, is or at least what remains as a concern for me is I have no issue with this idea of really making sure as many farms as possible are getting support, and I appreciate the idea that it will that this fund will ultimately be used to define like other, you know, there's other resources, other ways that funding will go to farms as needed. I guess what gave me some concern was kind of what that denominator number is, because the estimate of like 240 farms, but then the comptroller points out that there's actually over 400 farms. And so I feel like we need some clarity as to what that floor is actually looking like. Is it now 3,000 per farm, or if it's actually more like, I mean, you didn't talk about an ARPA because I knew I would bring it up here, but to really get back to that, given the conversation that you had with the comptroller, like, does that change this basis, or are you feeling that the farms that are the difference between the 200 and so and the 400 and so are not farms that you would feel should be supported?
So the number of 250 comes from the census that the comptroller referenced, which shows a 12% decline from the previous census, which shows a 12% decline from the previous census. So we factor that in and then corroborated with other indicators of how many farms there are in Ulster County that the Soil and Water Conservation District has in terms of the number of people they reach out to. We use several different numbers, so we think that's a very reasonable number, and I spoke with the comptroller about it. I don't think there's any need to adjust that.
Sorry, can I just follow up? And then the question of not every farm is on on the agricultural list. Like, so have you?
Yeah, so the idea that we have, and it needs to be operationalized, is that there may be farms that are not in an ag district for one reason or another and not on a list. We would like those farms to come in and apply and show us why they should be categorized as a farm, so that we get a sense that's not based just on USDA definitions or on zoning of who's actually farming and what they're doing. So it's in that sense that we do expect this program to give us more information about what's happening in farms in Ulster County. The Department of Planning has received a grant to do, a small grant to do some farmland protection work. They will also have additional data that comes in through that program. So I think we haven't finalized the answer to the question, but we have a good starting place for it.
Sorry, can I just follow? So, and I appreciate that idea that it can attract people who are not in an ag district, who might encourage them to get in that ag district, but do you have some estimate of how many that is, and does your number round high enough up that it would incorporate them, or will it in the end, if you're perfectly successful, and that every farm, whether it's in an ag district or not, responds, whether you feel comfortable that 250 would be it, or whether it's more, only because we're in Ways and Means. And so if we're giving a base of 3,000 per, then knowing whether you added an error on either side that really would reflect success of these other people reaching out to us. Is that incorporated in that? Is these new, these ones that will come to our attention?
The best estimate that we have with all the data, including that USDA census data, is that there are between 250 and 300 farms in Ulster County. So 250 is not 100% of the largest number that we think there could be, but we don't think that everybody will come in even on an easy access program like this. So I think these are good enough figures. I don't know where you would go to get better figures except by actually doing this program. And so that's the reason I think we should move forward and gather more information and see if we have done it correctly. But we reached out to over a dozen different groups about this, and nobody has challenged that figure. There's corroboration from the number of organic farms, and we correlate that with the number of total farms. So I think we've done that work, and I feel confident of the number. We could adjust so that we gave a smaller amount of money initially, and make people come back a second time. My preference would be to give this amount of money initially, and if it turns out that we find that there are many more farms, that we look at that as a body and allocate additional funding.
You know, hearing the director in Soil and Water talk, he talks about not wanting to subsidize farmers. A lot of the things that we're doing in some of this legislation that's being put forward are things that Soil and Water already does. They've taken a long time to learn and develop those relationships with local farmers. And he was talking the other night about not wanting to subsidize, because he doesn't just want to hand money that is just going to momentarily be money and then be gone. They're really trying to help enable local farms in a way that when they spend money and use resources, that it's in a way that's going to build the farm up to then sustain. Because a subsidy is a handout. When it's gone, it's gone. And they know what they're doing over there. We're talking about creating a position as well that was going to answer to economic development. Now, planning. Right in a soil and water presentation the other day, we heard from the director there that it takes 2 to 3 years to develop the relationships and to get someone up to speed to do something like this. It's the devil's in the details. And what we're trying to throw together here in a 2-year period, and just to hand out money to every farm, are we sure that some of these farms are, that's their prime, are we just giving it to farms if that's their primary revenue stream? Or are these gentlemen farmers too that, you know, have a nice farm, but really make their money in another way? We're just gonna. So I just think we take this money. 75 to 90% of this resolution is done by Soil and Water already, and I just think that's where the money should go. That's just me.
The budget for Soil and Water in Ulster County that is directed towards agriculture is less than $400,000, and this program is for $2 million. So to say that we're already doing it is just flies in the face of those figures. The resolution and the program call for using what Soil and Water is already doing and building upon it. This is supported unanimously by the Ulster County Soil and Water Board of Directors.
They're capped with one of the things that they give out at $5,000 because they have so few funds. That's my point. We only give them a couple hundred thousand. Imagine they had $2 million and these experts and that already have these relationships had that kind of money to go and not just subsidize, but to build, to help build these farmers and what they're doing, the farmers that really need it. I mean, I'd love to have Jake in here and not just say, do you support this, but what if we gave you the $2 million to do exactly what we want done here? What would he say? I'd love to hear it before we vote on this. I think it'd be valuable to hear.
So I think there's questions that are appropriately directed towards the Ulster County Soil and Water District. Those are not just directed to the executive director. The executive director reports to a board. So I'm happy to have any legislator come and ask these questions directly to the board. One of the difficulties with the Soil and Water Conservation District in regard to ARPA funding is that they have a very high administrative overhead. A lot of the money that comes to them actually does not go out to farmers. This program, 90+% goes out directly to farmers. The what the legislator is suggesting is that we redo Ulster County Soil and Water and greatly increase their staff and have them manage funds. That is another approach. I think it's a far inferior approach, and it's not in front of us. So I think this will actually provide some relief, and it was the approach that the Board of Directors at Soil and Water wanted us to take.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think that soil and water is one piece of the picture. I mean, cooperative extension, also doing work and working with farms and our planning departments, you know,
USDA.
Connecting with farms, USDA, it's the Ag Society. We could all just start chiming in, and there's a whole lot. And at some point, I think it probably would behoove us to get everybody to one table, virtual or otherwise, to have a conversation. I mean, some of what's being raised were the concerns that I raised. I was just in the ARPA committee and voted it out of the ARPA committee, but I continue to have a bit of hesitation, not in the dollar funding. I certainly I would support more ag funding than this number, but I have pretty serious concerns about the $3,000 per farm and what that's going to mean, and the seventeen census said 420 farms, but we're seeing 250. But who are they? And everybody would be happy to get a $3,000 check. That kind of goes without saying. But how meaningful is it going to be to their bottom line? I see a value in connecting with them. That's something that Legislator Nolan has been advocating, the idea of getting these farmers to the table, getting them seen, and getting a connection with the county. And I think that there is definitely value in that. I just continue to be concerned about such a substantial investment spread so thin across so many farmers. But I do think we need to take next steps. There was a willingness to be open that this resolution, basically how we left it in ARPA, this resolution is dedicating the $2 million and defining a project goal. Certainly one aspect of that is the outside contractor person who's going to work for a year in effectuating the goals that as they're stated, but the idea and the expectation would be that those could change based on these kinds of conversations moving forward, meaning the goals that there might be some movement. I still have some hesitation. It's just very hard for me to vote against moving something for ag at this point. But I'm struggling a bit.
Especially Lonnie.
No, the chair said it well. You're giving examples of duplication of, you know, many duplications of the same thing. I mean, we're creating another thing, and us as now the legislature and the planning board is going to do another form of it. We're going to do it quick in 2 years with money that's running out. And I just think that we'd get a lot more bang for our buck if we went through these institutions, Cornell, Soil and Water, that this is what they do. And we just gave them the funding that they long needed. But instead, we're going to create a temporary position and think that we're going to do it better on the sixth floor.
Well, I think the one argument for this approach, and again, I've been really pushing against this approach for some time, but one argument for this approach is that, you know, this is ARPA funds given to us to, you know, in an extraordinary time to fill a gap where there's need. And I think we can't really argue that our farms are in need. You know, COVID has just created unbelievable. There was already pressure on ag in Ulster County, but what's happened to the market, the things we were discussing before in terms of the value of land, has just totally exacerbated that problem. Like, I mean, I personally know of two CSAs that closed because they were on rental property that they couldn't afford to stay open. And that's long been an issue with farmers in this region. But now, you know, property's going for multiples of what it was going for before, and people are putting, you know, large fancy homes on giant tracts or subdividing into many smaller units. But farming is one of the last thoughts, I think, in terms of purchase of property. You know, it seems like a little bit of a sidebar, but I think that the issues of climate change and the what's happening in the world right now should make us very concerned for preserving farmland here, because you hear it over and over that this region of the country is likely to become the breadbasket of this country. You know, the portions of California that are known for basically producing all the lettuce, all the avocados, all the almonds, I mean, they're dried out. They don't have any water. So, we're going to have to really be thoughtful. But I still have an issue potentially with, okay, $3,000. How much of a, are we actually keeping someone from closing up shop, or are we helping someone that's mowing their property for hay, and has a private estate? I don't know, and maybe we just have to get to the point where we start drafting the proposal and really digging in. But there has to be a willingness to be able to change at that point too. I'm struggling a bit.
All right, I'll call much ceremony next.
It's a bunch of money. Some of this money is what. A little piece of what's driving inflation as well. Why wouldn't, before we expend it and it's gone, why wouldn't we do what you just said before and bring the experts, these four or five different entities, to the table and say, look, we have this money. What do we do? Wouldn't that be the way to do it, rather than trying to invent something on the fly here on the sixth floor? $3,000. Bing, 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 bing.
All right, so
it's government.
Call you next, but thanks. Just chime in for a second. I have to agree with Legislator Maloney. I think, and Chair Bertel has the same point. A lot of the issues I've had with a lot of these ARPA funding projects is they're just one-time gifts and they don't really do anything going forward. For me, $3,000 doesn't really do anything, and I don't know that it's going to save anybody's farm. I like the grant system better, where there's a need. It actually leverages our money to do something to save a farm, maybe makes it more efficient, better producing, whatever it is that money can be used for. And it's not just a gift of $3,000 to everybody. I think we have an opportunity, I think we had the opportunity with ARPA to do that for a lot of projects, and some we have, and some they're just gifts. And there's not, you know, once the money's gone, and we're back to square one again. Yeah, there's a lot of farms. I've got several by me that lease properties, and they're being kicked off their property now because the lease is up and the property's more valuable. Actually, wrong.
You said everything I was going to say about the, you know, millions of dollars we've already spent in the same fashion.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who's worked the land, we really ought to consider policy that protects the farm land against this sort of increase in property values that we're seeing. I learned from counsel recently the United States has repeatedly rejected the idea that we have a right to food, that people have a right to eat, essentially, in our country, which is it's really disturbing for me to learn as a grower. But I think whether this is the correct resolution or not, to allocate these funds, I'd be inclined to support it. We need to think about, if that's the attitude of our federal government, what maybe we can do here in the county to say, well, we actually do believe that eating is a right, and we're an agricultural county that produces a lot of food, and how do we support that? There are a lot of federal and state subsidies that are simply not available to most of the farms in this county, because they're much smaller than Midwestern farms, California farms, and so forth. So we need to be talking to our state and federal legislators as well about changing that. Thank you.
The putting this together was a collaborative process with dozens of organizations that you've mentioned, Chair Bartels, and with talking with the farmers, as well as the Soil and Water Conservation Board. So we have three facets of this program, and it's, I guess, likely that somebody would object to one of the three and like the other two, I hope. Maybe those ratios would differ for some people. But one third of this proposal is to jumpstart farmland preservation and conservation efforts in Ulster County in ways that have not happened, and that the Soil and Water Conservation Board, as articulated by the executive director, do not want to do. So that's part of the future planning. And there's subsidies for work that would be preserving the soil, that a third for that. And a third that would be these starter monies that would bring people in the door to have the conversation about whether they would do some of the climate resilient and soil health types of actions. Because if they say they will do that, then they get additional funding to that baseline. The baseline was put in there because small farmers who were talking to me and the Soil and Water Conservation Board said that if we would do something for them, it would give them a little hope that the county was actually noticing their particular situation and the fact that they don't get these big grants that are go by acreage, and that they hope that it would be an indication that we would be doing more in the future. So that's what was, you know, we were trying to put together something that literally responded to what they were requesting. I think that we have the opportunity to have this program be a pilot for a lot of bringing together of the various other efforts that are happening out there, and make those other efforts more effective, more known. This both gives a fish to somebody who is hungry and doesn't have one, and teaches how to fish.
Chair Bartosz, I'm Mr.
So, I think it's great that two-thirds of this, you know, are well thought out and sound very, very important for the farms. I guess, you know, and the idea of spending $750,000 to bring people in the door, I feel like is that's a lot of money to bring people in the door. I think that knowing that those other two efforts are out there and that there's money put towards it will bring people in the door. That they'll and if we have to spend $10,000 on advertising and promotion, but that it seems like a lot of money just to be aware of them when there's this whole two-thirds chunk of money that is being offered, that I just believe that will make them aware to know that they would have that, you know, an opportunity of that funding. I suppose I would like to hear, since you've had all those conversations, what people are saying that maybe we don't understand, what they're saying that $3,000 will really do for them, because that seems to be the concern. If it's just to bring them in the door, that doesn't feel as compelling. But if you actually could maybe share how $3,000 could help a farmer right now in a meaningful way, maybe that would be useful.
So the farmers have increases in their fuel prices and increases in fertilizer prices and increases in some of them in, many of them in wages. Part of that anticipated for future state-regulated increases. And some of them are on the edge of putting, what they're telling us is they're putting fields fallow. And when they do that, the next step is they sell it, because the land is now worth, as Chair Bartel said, so much for other real estate purposes that it's very hard for them to resist the notion of a quick profit, because they can make a lot of money by selling their farmland right now. So what the $3,000 was just the is not just to bring them in the door. It would have the advantage that some people who are kind of nervous or have had bad experience with state and federal programs that don't give them any money when they go through a big application. This is to say, just because you're a farmer, you are of value to Ulster County, and we want you to continue doing that. It is absolutely true that it's to everybody's benefit if each person who's farming in Ulster County right now keeps that farmland in production and does not sell it. This program, I think, will protect and preserve some of the farmers who come in here from going a different direction.
Thank you. I mean, one of the concerns that I had in relation to spreading that money, what I saw as thin, the $3,000 to each of the farms, is that, as we learned in ARPA, if this moves forward along with the other programs that are contemplated in today's packet, you know, we're down to roughly $2.2 million left. And based on what's in the queue, there's at least half of what's in the queue that's not going to get funded, because we do not have enough to fund everything that's left in the queue. Not counting this in the queue, counting this as something that gets funded. And so I say that to say that this is potentially the opportunity to spend, if it's the legislature's will, to fund the other things rather than to spend more on agriculture. This is the opportunity to make that money be most effective, which is why I still struggle, like I'm hearing colleagues in this committee struggle with the $3,000, just in terms of both getting them in the door, getting them to feel good about their government and their government's responsiveness to them. So I'm just not sure that that's the best expenditure of that $750,000. The other parts, which we didn't talk about in depth, which is the farmland protection and the expanded programming, that makes sense to me. I have less of a concern than Legislator Maloney does about the person, the contract person, because I think if we were to hire the right person, that person could help be a liaison from the county to, like, that's a smaller spend than $750,000. That's one contract person to be dealing with farms, providing back information, potentially administering these programs, working with all these different agencies, hopefully creating the dialogue that you're saying is missing, both in their experience with not just the county, but with other you know, government programs, federal, state, et cetera. So, but again, I don't know how much willingness there is to move. The part of the problem is that these resolutions, which is specific to ARPA, these resolutions are like omnibus capital projects. This one doesn't have to be a capital project, where we just approve a capital project, we approve this funding of $2 million, and then there it is. Like, we are not technically approving all the detail of what we are spending all this time discussing. That's kind of an issue.
Something I just neglected to think of, and of course it makes sense for Ways and Means. The original idea we had on the funding, where somebody would come in and get something as a farmer coming in the door, was to show that they had had a large decrease in income. And so we were going to base it on a decrease in income. It turns out that most of these small farmers barely break even. Their income figures from that 2017 census are so low that it doesn't even make sense to talk about if their income declined by 50%. So part of the reason we went to this other criteria of just being the small farm is it's a surrogate for farms that are marginal at the start. The decline in value of income, we're still trying to get a handle on that for farms that would be larger farms that would have more than a 50% decrease in income. So we are trying to respond to the fact that farms are in some way showing a loss, but these smaller farms, we know they are already not breaking even in many of the cases. I think the average income for those smaller farms is something on the order of $25,000 to $35,000 a year. So requiring them to show that they've had a 50% decline in income, that they're not going to be existing to come in and show that.
Yeah, I mean, again, one of the challenges is, and you said that you got a list of farms, which we haven't seen yet. I appreciate, you know.
Yeah, I tried to send it, but it won't open. So
and that's fine, but it's there's a couple things happening. One, you know, there's a whole range. You know, you could, as I said in the other committee, you could create an LLC to plow your field for if you own a big property, to plow your field for hay, or and not really be concerned about making money per se. Like, you're not a farmer first, you're a property owner, and that gives you the ag exemption and maybe a little extra. But we're also talking about net, so in a little farm, I have no idea. I don't know what that even means. Like, if someone's just has a blueberry, I won't know till I see it. That's the thing. Like, there's a really big, we run a wide range of our big agritourism businesses, relatively big financially, to CSAs, to little farms, to really, really little farms. Like, there's a, right down the road from me, it looks like a private home, and they set up a stand with all these vegetables where you weigh and pay on your own. Are they considered a farm? Are they actually, would they be in this list? Do they run a business? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. They are not less important to me. I want to make sure that whatever we're doing with these funds, that it has the biggest impact. That's all. And I've said it before, I would support more funding. There are other projects coming up that I'm not as ready to support, that I would support that money going to agriculture. I just have this hesitation about the $3,000 portion of it.
And just to jump in on what Chair Bartel said, same thing. Down in my area, it's technically Legislator Lopez's district on the outskirts of the Ellenville area, but there's a farm there that they grow Christmas trees. Is that a farm?
Mm-hmm.
So we're giving to a business. Yeah, I mean, it's not. I don't think it's the intent of what we're looking to do with these farms. The other thing, and it just popped in my head, of another farm that we have that did this, tried to do a program where they distributed produce to local residents who wanted to purchase it directly, and they would have these drop-off spots that they would leave it, and the people would pick it up. And they had to end it because it became too popular, and they couldn't keep up with it and manage the farm at the same time. I'm not saying this is a solution or a use of the funds, but maybe it is, where if several farms were willing to do that kind of a program, if there was a cooperative, website, person, whatever it is, that's where we're using money that fell into our laps to leverage more money for them down the road, instead of just $3,000 here, do what you want with it. When it's gone, I'm sorry, that's all we have for you.
So I think the kind of program you're talking about could grow out of this and be managed by an agricultural person. I mean, part of what we're working through is that we have not had a Department of Agriculture or an individual assigned just to work at agricultural issues in Ulster County. And this program puts that in. And yes, that's a small dollar figure part of the program, but it's going to be the part that addresses a lot of what we're talking about. I think that if we wait until that person or organization is working for us and doing that, we are going to lose farmland, and that hay field that we may not feel is very much value, if it's sold for something else and is no longer hay, that takes that out of farm production for something better in the future, potentially. It also may cost somebody a job who's currently haying it. And so there's a lot of moving parts on this. It's very complicated, but I think this is the best way that we could come up with where we actually address the needs of the farmers that are identified to us. We interviewed the executive director, put together a list of 16 farmers that he spoke with, and all of them reported more than 100% increases in all of their supply chain needs. The word crisis is in the title of this resolution because it is that. So I appreciate that people feel like we could design a better program somehow, but I don't think that you've brought up anything that wasn't considered in the designing of this program, and it has the support of the Soil and Water Conservation District. It has the willingness to work from four different departments to you know, implement it and make it better. I think we'll be coming back to the committee of oversight, economic development, and all those other things, and agriculture, and we can make, you know, we can make adjustments as we go along. But it'd be very hard for me to see how taking any of the pedestals off this tripod will leave it really addressing the farmers in Ulster County. It's close to 90% of the farmers in Ulster County are small farmers, according to the most recent census information. So taking out the part that addresses their needs is really painful. You know, it would be painful to me. It seems like we want it to be something other than what it is, which is there's a lot of small farms with small acreage that have never gotten anything. And this program that is trying to find a way to give that to them in a way that's manageable for us. If we gave all the money to the crop cover and soil health and all that, I think we'd have to hire more people to implement it and monitor it and oversee it. So we would be getting less money directly to farmers.
So they won't do them on?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess what I'll say, and it's sort of repeating, but I'm still not feeling convinced in the list of the things that our farmers are struggling with right now that 3,000, like, will keep their farmland or keep their staff. I mean, it would get them over a hump of maybe a month. I just wonder if, and I brought this up also at the ARPA meeting, you know, the executive's office for the previous resolution, they went back to the drawing board and said, you know what, we have really good, smart people who really know how to best expend this money. We'll just use the money and have those good, smart people do the right thing and get it to the soup kitchens and other places. I've heard repeatedly that you have a lot of really good, smart people already at the table on this. And I feel really confident that they would really know how to spend this money exactly right, and that's what you're planning on them doing with the other two-thirds. $750,000 is not that small amount. I'm still not compelled to believe that with all of the other revenue that's a part of this, even moving the $750,000 into that, you know, the full amount is going to be, is that and the good, smart people you have at the table will be, I believe, enough to let all of these small farmers know that these kinds of services and programs exist. And I hear a lot of concerns about that, what you're calling a one leg, but I think there's so much support for the amount of money, so much support for getting the right things to the farms, and you have a complete infrastructure in place. Even before hiring somebody, you have an infrastructure of people who have already been talking about this. So I actually feel like distributing the money through that group would actually work faster, because you already said in the last meeting that with the 3,000, well, we'll do an application, we'll make sure we'll rule out the people who really shouldn't have it. So that's all going to take a lot of time. While you have all of these people who have already been coming together who could immediately, we could pass this, and they would start coming up with a really substantial plan for a good amount of money. And I don't necessarily believe it would be slower to do it that way. And I think it would make a lot more people comfortable. And so I guess I just ask, given in light of the executive being willing to step back from a plan and say, okay, I hear you, here's a different approach, whether there's any consideration to say, okay, I hear the part that's concerning, you know, maybe that is an approach we can take. Again, knowing that you have a team together, you know, that it's not a group you have to form. You have them. We could approve this. You could meet the next day and have a distribution plan that probably we would all be quite impressed with. And maybe that plan is 3,000 to every farm, but it would come from, like, you know, the desire and the approach of just sort of saying, let's have this group figure out the right way, just like with the soup kitchens and all that.
All right, Legislator Maloney, then Deputy Zicker Ryder, and then Legislator Maloney.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with the preservation farmland protection aspect, but everything else, it's not just that the wrong, some of the farms could be eligible for this money at once. I think it's a struggle for many of us to come up with a scenario in which a one-time $3,000 payment would have the farm still here in a year that wouldn't be without the $3,000. If not four, I talk about a lot. You know, it's a very complicated subject. Really what our local farms are struggling with is corporate farming or third world farming and how they can't produce fruits and vegetables even locally right in our backyard for cheaper than we can get it from another country or another part of our own country. Really, this is going to take state and federal, you know, tariffs and taxes and kind of in order to build these local farmers a platform and a revenue stream that's sustainable for them. I don't know if we're going to be able to do a lot of this on the county level. We should look into what we're allowed to do as far as rewarding foods produced here in this county or putting something onto certain foods that we produce here that come from out of county or out of country. I don't know what we can legally do there, and there's repercussions to all that. But short of that, you know, coming up with a program that we know there's certain pieces of machinery that local farms could really use, that stuff soil and water works on, that's something where we could do something tangible that's long-lasting. But I don't see much here that is really, you know, where the juice is worth the squeeze and we're going to see any results down the line besides the farmland protection. So a third of this, I think most of us are probably somewhat comfortable with, but I think we need to start, you know, talking about what we can actually do with that money.
So not in the ARPA committee earlier today, but last week or the week before, it was brought up that there was an amendment to this that is bringing in a contract agency to help build out the program. So if there is one of those partners that want to do this, I think they would submit to the RFP and those experts in the field that have been discussed tonight, they're not going to do that kind of work for free with the current resources that they have. They just wouldn't have time, and I think passing this allows for that to happen and the program to get built out.
Let's say
it
all.
Yeah, if the suggestion from Legislator Walter was that this passes and then that we discuss it and adjust it, I'm thrilled with that, especially with the person that or organization we hire to help us guide us. I'm not wedded to this. I just have thought from all the other conversations that you needed to have a pretty good idea of what we would be starting with. $3,000, if it's not in the census itself, but I believe I did these calculations. If the average income for these small farms in Ulster County is $35,000, which is what I'm remembering, that's almost 10% of their income, $3,000. And they don't just get $3,000. They get that part plus any of the other monies that they would have for the soil health and the climate resilience. So they could get up to $25,000 the way the numbers would break out. That would be 100% of the income for some of these small farms. So it's not as marginal as we may imagine if you have an income that's 3 or 4, 5 or 10 or more times what these farms are facing. And their supply chain issues are shifting already. They had high increase of fuel costs. That may be coming down. So there are things that if we just stabilize, they can then come back in a way that I think we will, you know, I think it's unquestionable we will lose more farms if we don't do this. But if the will of the legislature is that the program be set up and funded now and that there be adjustments, that would be fine. Tell me the way to articulate that better than what's in here, and we'll do it. I just don't want to have delays that mean we're redoing this program for months before we actually put out an RFP and get somebody in who's a hired consultant to help us.
Thank you. So this through chair to Legislator Nolan. Have you gotten all the various agencies together to discuss how they can work together on this. It's like soil and water and, you know, I guess the Ag Society and the Rondout Valley Growers Association, all these groups that are would be impacted by this. Have you convened them or questioned them as to what would be the best use for this? Because that's been suggested a few different times that we do that, right? And so are there plans to do that? Have you done that?
So the conversations that prior legislator Jim DeLon and I have been individually with each of those groups, from scheduling reasons primarily. Certainly it's a great idea to invite them all to the table. They go to other tables and talk with each other quite a bit. And we've had zero opposition and total applause.
Right, so it's not so much the opposition, but enough to come together, you know, because of the whole aspect of, you know, none of us are smarter than all of us, right? And so if you put this whole group of people that would be directly affected by the cost in farming sitting at a table and request of them suggestions of how this $2 million would be best spent is really where I'm going, right?
Well, that's what our original question was that we sent out to over a dozen agencies. It was, you know, they were listed in a slide presentation that I did, I think in economic development as well as in ARPA. How, if you had $2 million, how would you spend it? So we did that with all these agencies that we've been naming and independent nonprofits, both state, regional, national. And we went to farmers. We went back to the farm board and asked them. We got additional qualitative survey data through the executive director of the farmers in the region. Legislator Litz, who is a farmer himself, is the co-sponsor on this. I think we have done as much as you can do other than say that you want to try to get another committee together to discuss it further.
Well, what were some of the recommendations that came from that group? Because it seems to me like we're talking about the same thing over and over and over again about distributing $3,000 to a number of farms that apply and meet a criteria that has yet to be defined, right? And so my question is, what did they come back and tell you, right?
Well, there were some that really liked the farmland conservation and said, why don't you do more of that? Everybody liked the additional funding for programs that are funded by New York State, but at minimalist kind of levels. And everybody was very excited about the small farm support, which nobody else is doing. Mm-hmm. And they said it was creative, and they wanted to see what our success was. Did they say, that's a great idea, we've done it and it succeeded? No. They said, this is innovative.
Okay.
What everybody felt was that we need to try something innovative because all these structures that you've all been describing have been failing farmers for the past 30 or decades and more.
So is this documented anywhere, these questions and answers?
Farms across Ulster County, in New York State, across the nation are declining year after year.
No, I know, but specifically to your inquiries to these groups, is that documented, their responses anywhere? That we could read and see.
I can ask if it's okay for me to send you the email conversation
had. Okay. So it's not, we don't have a compiled list of responses from individual groups.
If you'd like to put that together, I'd be happy to do it. I'd also be happy to approach each of them and ask them if I could share their email conversations with us. We didn't record any of the Zoom conversations,
okay. But
we had hour-long conversations with everybody on the list that I presented earlier, plus some others.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. There's a lot. And it's already 7 o'clock, and it's Resolution 7. And, I think one thing, Legislator Nolan, in terms of getting moving, and again, this might be something that Legislator Maloney totally disagrees with me on, given that it's based on an earlier comment. One thing I think that potentially, from my perspective, could move more quickly is the approval of the funding to hire the person to get this going. And where I hear a disconnect and where I go back and forth is both this is like this willingness to define the program, and I don't mean this as a negative criticism, I just mean it as an observation, and your firmness in sticking with the $3,000 aspect. Like, it's a tenet of this program as it's created, and one part of what you said is that you really want to move that aspect for, you know, quickly, and I am not so sure that, I mean, I feel pretty positive that it's unlikely that $3,000 is going to keep a farm from going under. It certainly could help. It's going to help, and I get that it's a percentage. But I still haven't even seen these numbers, so it's like I feel a little adrift in really being able to assess what $3,000 across 250 farms would be. And I also would expect that even if we said yes right now, it's going to take months to get that money to 250 farms. I mean, the not-for-profit, and it's no disrespect, it just Nate would acknowledge the not-for-profit in terms of setting up the application and then going through it. Now, I realize this would be simpler. It took a long time. So I think even if it was streamlined, a couple months would be fast. You know, I do want to see us move. I'm totally ready to support moving on the contractor to get that going. I feel like we should have a more in-depth conversation, not at this table, and to Legislator Cahill's point, to get everybody, the key people, to one table, having the conversation might be a great idea, having Soil and Water, having Cornell, having everybody at one table, having one conversation in the same space, virtual or physical. So what's becoming apparent to me is that it's probably not going to move tonight, and that's even if I lent it my support, because there's only four of us here, and we've heard some pretty strong concerns about a couple aspects. So I don't know if we want to think about a week or a month. I'm not sure what the rest of the committee wants, but I think we do have to think through the whole agenda.
Comptroller Gallagher, and
I just want to mention that unfortunately the last ag census is from 2017, but that 29% of the farms identified had income of sales less than $2,500, and 51% of the farms had sales less than $9,999.
Yes, so they're like,
I wonder what they are.
That's like the folks by you.
But what are they?
They're the ones by, like you.
They're not farms. That's what they're
with
not.
All due respect, that's what makes me, that's where I first came with the question. If there's 416 farms and a significant percentage have sales less than 2,500, I need to really understand, like, what kind of farm is that? Like, what is it? And I don't mean it to be disrespectful to ask that question. Is it, again, I can think of another person. Is it the person down the road who is selling hostas that they dug out of their garden and they're deemed a farm? I don't, like, that's only $2,500 in sales. And maybe that person $3,000, but I don't know if we're actually preserving farms. Whereas I think there are going to be people in that list, there are going to be farmers in that list that are on the edge, that there's a make or break where we could have a meaningful impact of keeping them in business. And so I'm just, I want to be sure we're going to do that. Again, I would be willing to commit all the rest of the ARPA funds, including the Main Street program, to ag. I just do not feel confident that we've yet gotten to where we are in the actual programming of it. So, yeah, and I'm sorry. I feel like I'm talking in a circle. I apologize.
And also being told that dozens of local experts have told us this is the way to go. That's what I'm struggling to find out. I mean, that kind of information should be readily available to us as we're figuring out. And this is an approach.
Point of clarification. I didn't hear that. I heard that they thought it was innovative. I didn't hear that
they were in support of this and that were contributed to this.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think they are very supportive of it, and I think I get letters of support for this resolution and this program from every single one of them.
My point is,
the program is designed this way because they encouraged us. Not, I don't care.
Okay, right. And it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, this large aspect of it. With the now, just I ask to please give me a kind of a rundown on daily, like, what is this person that we're going to hire do on a daily basis, day in and day out?
So they would manage this program.
The 3,000.
They would manage the program that is in the budget and in the budget narrative in its three different aspects. I hope that the ARPA management team and I would continue to work on the draft application so that by the time that they're hired, we actually have a draft that they would have to make very small changes to. Then we would, that person would do a pilot with 20 farms coming in and seeing what's going on and whether the initial application would work. Then they would work with the Soil and Water District to monitor whether people who have signed up and said they're going to do things are actually doing them. They would work with the Pace Law Center, which is willing to give us pro bono assistance on different types of conservation easements that farms can put in place on their properties. So, yes, there is work to be done to finalize the job description to put out the RFP. But if we don't have the money to do this, then we don't put out an RFP. And I think to say that it would take a couple of months after the funding is released for it to be spent, I hope it's not true. I hope we can move faster than that. But even if it is true, if you push that further down the line by not funding it, you're just, you know, the programs that you're talking about, if somebody were designing that a year ago and had invited me to participate, I would have done it. You know, but this is what I've been able to bring. I don't know what, you know, the idea that we postpone it because we'll come up with something better than this, I just don't hear anybody suggesting what would be better. I'm hearing that we should actually take money from the programs that supplement soil and water and put it into the subsidy to the small farms, more like we did with the small businesses in Ulster County. It is stimulus money, and I hear some of the opposition is to stimulus. But you don't get stimulus if you don't get the money to the people. And this is designed after the small business and the nonprofit programs that we've already put into place in this county. It just brings in people who didn't qualify for that.
I still don't know what that person's going to do. It sounds like we hope they're as good as the people in soil and water. They're going to be doing much of what the individuals in soil and water do, who already have all the relationships and the expertise. They know who all the farmers are, what their needs are.
Soil and water will not do land conservation. That's
no,
the third of this project.
That's the third.
They also are already monitoring the maximum money that they can manage.
Thanks.
So, through the chair to Legislator Nolan, you did say that you were open to reconsider how this lays out. I would like to suggest a 1 week postponement. I would suggest, you know, we all felt very comfortable, even in its slight vagueness of the resolution for the soup kitchens, where it recognized that people who were going to be very thoughtful were going to think about the appropriate way. I would suggest using that, whatever language worked to that, because we were all good with it, and that you consider that. I was already worried about what the 3,000 would do, but hearing that there are going to be so many of these potential farms that aren't really farms, because if they're making 2,500 a year, they're not. This is not who you're truly targeting. And so the process of getting to who you actually really want to target is a little bit more complicated than I think it's being suggested. So what I would request is that you consider, again, it doesn't sound like we have an issue with the 2 million, but that you consider taking that kind of approach of pulling together, you know, under some kind of leadership, and maybe to Legislator Maloney's point, incorporating soil and water with somebody else who can be supporting the implementation of this project, and pulling together the right people and hearing the right needs and figuring out that allocation. You know, it isn't the same as the nonprofits, because we didn't just give it to every nonprofit. We didn't just get a list of nonprofits and then send them some division of the money. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a whole application process. I say, you know, that's the part we're okay with. It's just the first piece. So what I would suggest is bring it back a step. Again, emulate that other resolution. keep your whole amount of money. No one seems to have a problem with that. And like I said earlier, you have a team of people. It's not going to take you long to form the group of people who need to sort of be at the table. And I think we'll feel more comfortable with that as a whole, if you are so willing. I mean, and as you suggested, you might be.
Yeah, I think I'll need to talk with you to find out how the metaphor of the soup kitchen works in relative to this, but I'm happy to
Sure,
do
or just look at the resolution as it was written is what I was suggesting.
Their first resolution and then how it
No,
came.
The one we approved, the one where, in that case, it was Ulster Corps, who was going to gather together the necessary people and the necessary information and figure out the best way to distribute the money in the as needed. And we were good with that. And so, again, but not the first resolution that was Cornell Cooperative doing a research study, but the second one, which was Ulster Corps actually figuring out the best way to distribute this money because they were the right people to do it. That's what I'm suggesting.
Okay, but for Ulster Corps, there is a group that is already set up that can do that. I don't know of anything analogous in this realm. That's what we're trying to create. That's what this program would be. So that's why we would have an RFP for that. So if you're asking me
analogous to Ulster Corps?
Yeah, we don't have anything.
Well,
like
but
Ulster
you
Corps.
Said you have emails and conversations with so many. My point is, you have had conversations with so many people who would be the representatives at that table. The synonym of Ulster Corps is the individual you want to hire.
Okay.
And then the synonym of the organizations that are soup kitchens and food serving are all of the other soil and water, but also the farms and all those other people. So that's the equivalent. I don't have an issue with the individual that you're suggesting to sort of manage this whole thing. And the group that would be at the table are all the people you're already talking to.
Okay. So I will try to do that within a week. I'm happy to get as many of those people who've already been involved together as possible and see if they can identify something that we should change in this to make it better. Is that the charge?
Well, it's just a request. I'm motioning a postponement on that request.
How long?
1 week. I mean, if that's okay. I don't want this. I would like this to be in front of us this month. So I'm only.
Second on this one.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I mean, we haven't had a group to do this for.
Okay. All right. I'm going to take resolution 438 out of order. I apologize. 438. Confirming the appointment of Brian McGregor as insurance officer.
Move it.
Second. Discussion. Mr. McGregor is here. Any questions for him?
Good luck out.
Are you sure?
Welcome aboard and good luck.
I will say I've never met you. I don't know anything about you, but the fact that you stuck it out this long, that's some fortitude right there.
Very interesting.
That's one word for it. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you.
Like, if I knew you could take it out of order, I would have 2 hours.
Honestly, it's my fault because Natalie did point out to me earlier, and I completely forgot all about it.
I was going to say, I thought
who are these? Yeah, you should have filmed me because I have
look, there's a little sticker on it. Area.
Yeah, all right. So, what do we have?
Oh, wait, hang on. So, I have a motion to block 407 through 409.
You guys are here for 407?
No. We postponed this because I raised the question of how the cost of this went up. I don't remember whether 2 million what it was last Monthly was 3, so you took off a million?
It was a range. It was like 2 million to 3.5.
Okay, so I'm glad we got a 1.5 million off. Thank you. That's appreciative. And I guess all I could... So, yes, that's great. I'm going to say this, and I don't mean it with any disrespect at all, but very often there's been more than a few occasions where we are given an amount, then told it's double or triple because you originally did it internally with the help of DPW or whoever. So either the people you're asking internally are not very good at this, which I'm assuming is, or whatever you're getting, you should recognize is probably double. But, you know, like, what happens, the reason why I'm relevant is then we're told about the idea in the beginning with this concept of how much it costs, and that's when we buy in, and then it becomes really hard later to question it because we bought into it. But it's just so, it's so many times where it's like, well, this was our internal estimate, and of course it ends up being a lot more. So fine, if that's true, I mean, we had a resolution, I remember a budget time, I don't know, I think you brought it in, of like, you should automatically budget an excess amount knowing things are going to cost more. So there is a way to assume things are going to be more than you think, and if consistently these rough estimates are truly that far off, perhaps you add an exponentiating formula to that number, and that's what you give us when you first pitch the idea, so that we're really agreeing to an idea that's a little bit more reasonable and what it would be. If it was just once, it's one thing, but it's happened several times, and that's always the reason. So I guess I'm just asking, if you're asking your internal people in the future to make estimates, round way up and then share it with us that way, because you're not getting it right.
Please don't do that. Please. I mean, I feel like the previous administration, we got those high numbers so that you always come in under. And it affects many things, including bidding. If you're rounding way up, we're projecting what we're going to spend on things. So I realize that there's a kind of a sticker shock that happens when there's an internal underestimate and when things happen. But I would rather you not round way up. No offense, but it's just I feel like I lived through that in the previous administration. And we talked about it internally. We talked about the fact that, you know, we could generally expect to come in on projects under considerably, but by the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th project, it had to be that we were building in a certain amount of... I mean, that's how I did it when I was budgeting, you know, in film production. You don't want to come in over, so... But I don't want you to round way up so that then we feel better about...
Let me clarify my English. I don't want them to round way up. I want them to present a more accurate amount that it would cost us. And I'm saying that when they do their internal estimates, they are often off by several millions of dollars. And so I'm saying either find a better way to get an estimate, because I don't want it to keep coming under either. Mm-hmm. Find a better way to do the estimate, or recognize that you're consistently $2-3 million under. I mean... That's what I'm referencing. I'm not looking for anything inflated, but when we're presented with this idea of doing a renovation, that amount comes into consideration. And if that amount is truly not going to be right by millions of dollars, then it feels, and I'm not saying it's deceptive, but that's what it feels like. It's sort of like, wait, you got me agreeing to this, and now it's $2 million more or $3 million more. And so I'm just saying, if it happened this way once, it's one thing. But clearly, whatever that internal estimate is happening is off. It's not done, and I don't mean not done well, like any to criticize anyone, but it's clearly not correct when it's $1 to $2 million off.
I would just like to clarify that it's not several projects. I mean, I know this project. I don't know what other projects you're referring to. maybe the Veterans Cemetery. I mean, there were massive changes in some projects that we changed the entire scope of the project, and so it's going to be more expensive. But I would say for the most part, I mean, and we're just asking DPW to come in and give a quick, like, eyeball estimate, right? This was prior to us purchasing this building, so, I mean, we could do some walkthroughs, but we don't get as involved as when we hire an architect, which is what we're doing. They will come up with, once the architect is hired, they'll come up with their actual estimate. We're working with them, you know, in the RFP. They're the ones that said they thought it was going to be $2.5 to $3.5 million. They weren't taking a few things into account that Ruderhof is willing to do the demolition. They thought we might want an elevator, but we're taking that out. So there's some considerable costs that will be lower. It went from $1 million to $2 million, but that is what the new estimate is. When we work with the architect, we're going to expect that they design a building for $2 million, and it will also be funded by the state, likely.
Granted, but it went from actually $1 million to over $3 million. Or close to $3 million the first time we got it. So it didn't go one to two. That's $2 million
no.
different. And I get, and I don't have a question about the process you do. I get that you have to do an internal look through. I'm just saying, if for me, if I was looking for places to buy and I walked around New Paltz and I had someone and they're like, I'm guessing that will be $400,000 and I'm guessing that will be $200,000 and there are like $2 million off on each of those, I'd probably say you're doing a very bad job of guessing. And so I'm just saying, and I'm not going to vote against this, and I could say there's the veterans, I could probably guess Tech City, I would probably guess the jail is another example of that. And so I'm just saying that
a couple million,
I understand, but a few million dollars difference might suggest, perhaps, that a different approach of walk around might be in order. That's all.
That's
the money.
Yeah, we have the old jail demolition coming up. We'll see. Hopefully that comes in exactly where we thought it would be, and I think the chair and I have talked about projecting what we expect to spend is something that needs to stop. We should never do that. And way too often we publicly project what we expect to spend, and then suddenly our bids come in right around there. With regards to this or anything else that this has happened on, I think there's times, every instance it's got to be different. There's times there's probably unforeseeable things, and we can talk through that, and we can decide whether we think that was an unforeseeable reason for this project's price to be raised. There's other situations where we might find that we should have known. And then there's a confidence issue that we have to talk about and make sure it doesn't happen again. And the third one would be maybe we feel that it was deliberately done. And let me just emphasize, maybe. I'm not saying this was deliberate. No one heard me say it was deliberately done, did they? But anyways, maybe it was a deliberate way to get an approval, knowing that we'll be able to get what we really want done later because whatever. So it's going to be one of those three things, but it's up to us to do our due diligence and ask the right questions up front. This always happens, if you're saying it always happens, because we always approve everything without asking many questions. So it'll continue to happen unless we become a real body and actually have a little more part of the process. And we should have a bigger part of the process. When you look at where we're going to put the 911 center, we should have far more to do with the placement of that. We should be given 10 locations. We should have special meetings as a legislature. We should be presented with what we need, what this building needs. We need two trunk lines. I didn't hear about trunk lines until recently. But we should know that, and then we should be far more involved. But we're not. We approve everything, and then we wonder later why it doesn't ever go the way we want it.
Can I just respond very quickly? I just want to say that it would not be 7:30 and the second page if we did not do due diligence. And that's exactly what we're doing here.
Fair point. All right. Any other discussion? What do you got there?
Yeah. Sure. On the block.
Yeah, on the block. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm going to be opposed. Yeah. Resolution 414, authorizing the right to cross the right-of-way owned by Ulster County for the Ulster Delaware Railroad Corridor. Second?
I will second it.
Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried.
Dennis, thank you.
You're opposed?
I don't care.
Chair Martos. 433, providing exemption for sales and custody use tax. receipt of sales. Blah, blah, blah. Motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Oh. This is an extension of the. Oh, this is a clothing. Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Sorry. For a second, we're talking about gas.
All those
in
favor?
No, that's next.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. All right. 434, extending the gas tax statement. Can I have a motion?
I'm moving for discussion.
Second.
I'll second that for
discussion.
Discussion?
Yeah.
I mean, it's late. I have a lot to say, but I'm totally opposed to this. I was opposed to it last time. It was presented last time as a holiday. This would extend the holiday, which would make it feel more permanent. We don't even have the numbers from the holiday. I've been thinking about this a lot because this. I have a lot of concerns about this in particular as it relates to the environment and environmental issues, et cetera. I've spoken about the idea that we can't even be sure that the people we mean to get the relief from it are actually getting the relief, that it could be, the relief could be being pocketed by the gas stations themselves. All of that in this moment pales to the fact that we in county government, we know that that property taxes don't even cover the mandated services, the important services that we provide, and yet we're willing to forego on a critical aspect. This is proposing foregoing on a critical aspect of revenue that potentially offsets the property tax increase at a moment when we don't even know what financial situation we're facing in the coming year. So I think that this is I mean, I don't see a world where I'd ever support it, but I think it's especially bad timing.
Thank you.
I'll just make a motion to postpone this for a month, and we can take a better look at this and see what the impacts are, get some of the numbers from the first go-around here and see if we can see if it's worth it, see if we're, you know.
I don't know if we'll get the numbers until the end of the quarter, until after December, right? The comptroller leave.
I thought you got some sort of monthly preliminary numbers, no?
I'll check with the commissioner and just see what the sales tax reporting is and see if there's anything we can glean from that.
Yeah.
The
end of the quarter.
We'll get the beginning. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. There is a motion on the floor. One second.
No,
okay.
Because I know that.
Is there
any
second for postponement?
For the same reasons, we'll never vote yes for this.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna vote yes. I don't see where I'm gonna vote yes for it either. But in terms of the postponement.
I would just like to give the executive's office an opportunity to present us with some numbers if they can get them. If not, I'll certainly entertain a vote to not extend it. You know, it is what it is.
What numbers are we going to be looking for specifically?
Well, see the sales tax numbers specifically. That's what I would be looking for.
Like see how much money we didn't get?
Yeah, how much we didn't get. If there was a correlation to a decrease in sales tax revenue from when this was in place.
Brian, just to clarify one more.
Yeah, 1 month. Yeah,
I would. I'll second out of respect for my colleague, and also in anticipation of the information. Also, but being clear that there's so many reasons why I don't support it. I'm not going to support it in a month. But I'll support postponing it a month, particularly given the possibility that it may be enough to sway your vote.
Yeah.
which makes it a worthy postponement. I do want to just also point out that. To my knowledge, the state's holiday is set to expire, which makes this even in some ways less impactful. Because the argument that we were going to have an impact that was a value add to the state,
right.
You know, we're talking about potentially a very, very small amount. I ran those numbers and spoke about them when we passed this last time. Based on running out an average miles per gallon of the average vehicle and the average miles driven by the average person in Ulster County, it's such a potential minute savings that, again, if we were even headed down this road, I would strongly suggest that the conservative, small c conservative approach would be not to do this, to monitor the revenues we're getting from gas tax, and to allocate them specifically for greater benefit if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm in strong opposition, but I second and would support the postponement.
Plus, gas prices have come down significantly since we did this, over $1 a gallon from when we first did this. So
yeah.
That would be another consideration.
Let's do Walter.
Yeah. So the reason why I'm not supportive of the postponement, one, I mean, this went out. This came to us. If there was data to be provided, it should have been provided with the resolution, not just because we're asking for it. But it doesn't tell me whether gas stations took this money on their own. It doesn't tell me if people who normally would have struggled to make it to work can make it. Like, it won't give me any of the information of, like, what it's the resolution's intended to do of help our workforce in some meaningful way. All it will tell us is how much money we did not get. And so I just, you know, if there was a way of knowing how much this really helped people, I would be happy to wait and hear that information. And if it turns out it really changed people's lives, then I might feel differently. I doubt it, but I could, if I'm really getting that overwhelming sense that our working poor, like, this was the difference for them, then maybe it's worth counteracting this sort of environmentally questionable use of it. But that data is not going to come to us. So there's, you know, knowing whether we lost this much sales tax, this much sales tax, or this much sales tax, I don't know how that's an operationalization of its success or failure. So that's why out of respect, I would like to agree, but I'm only not agreeing because I don't think that those data will have the same meaning in terms of what the purpose of this resolution originally was.
Through your chair, to the extent.
Go ahead.
It was just a question through the chair to Legislator Cahill. What would the number be that would flip you one way or another? When you said numbers, I didn't even know what number are we going to find out, because we're not going to get much tangible, but obviously the only number we could find out is what we could have gotten, but what would the number be that would have you, so why would it be, you know, if they wait to vote, because you could see a number that might have you go one way or another, what I'm asking you is.
Well, I think I said that earlier, the difference in the sales tax revenue from one quarter to the other before this and then after, if it was negligible, you know, then whatever.
What's your definition of negligible? I mean,
well, not much of a difference, right? If the sales tax revenue has been going up a certain percentage each quarter or not, you know, and this is at the end of the summer tourist season where it should be very, very high, right? Basically our second busiest quarter, I would think, right? If I saw that didn't happen, right, as a result of this, then maybe that would give me a consideration of that. If we saw a decrease in sales tax for gasoline taxes coming, you know, basically on a throughway, for example, you know, something to think about. And that would be my personal decision at the time, when we get the numbers.
And you think that 8% would have something to do with those differences that you see?
I don't know.
Let's say it can.
Yeah, so I was going to go, I lost my train of thought. Just give me one second. I'll get it back quickly. I got it. So in the budget for next year, you guys, the executive's office has projected a certain amount of revenue for gasoline tax. What did you decrease your projection on based on this possibly being extended?
We didn't.
You didn't?
So no, the executive budget is still under preparation, okay. So at this point it would be too speculative.
Too soon? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a number in mind?
No, not yet.
The budget doesn't exist until we get it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the resolution contemplates a loss in $10 million.
Nine something.
Right.
For the year. Because this tax holiday ends in December
22nd.
And then after that, it gets reinstated.
So six more months. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll never know exactly what we lost, but by comparing against, as you say, like, you know, I just want to point out that, you know, even to this day, you know, there's a pretty big discrepancy from station to station within the county. And on the day it went into effect, every station should have dropped their cost, you know, their retail price by our 8 cents plus whatever the state was, 16 cents or something.
Yeah.
And I can tell you flat out that didn't happen. You know, I drove around the night before and then drove around the next day, and, you know, I did not see.
Can we get that data?
That's not necessarily true. I mean, when you buy something, you know, you set the price off of what you paid, so they might have
not on this because they're we taxed it after, so that it was clear that if they were actually passing the savings to the consumer on the day that it took effect, they would have stopped charging the 8% that we the 8 cents that we stopped charging them, and they would have stopped charging the 16 cents that they weren't being charged by the state, no matter what they had paid for the gas. They were no longer going to have to pay that, and if it were passed on as a savings, but that's not. There's no way that we could have assured that happened, and that remains. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I think we are removing, a tool that helps to keep the property tax base, arguably a regressive tax, the property tax stable, because as we know, the property taxes do not fully cover our programs. We need sales tax revenue to fund the great programming that we do, the critical programming that we do in this county that we're going to be talking about as we go resolution through resolution. And so, I there's no world where I'm going to support this, and I would speak out against all the environmental things, not tonight, but I think that's critical too. So.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it next month, and hopefully Legislator Cahill changed his mind.
Maybe.
Thank you. I do want to support the spirit and then actions that do provide relief to working class, working poor motorists in our county. And I had apart from this, I just wanted to let the committee know that I spoke with, started talking with council about an alternative around sales tax exemption for repairs to vehicles, and I'll keep you updated about that.
Okay. All right. So just to go, I'll support Legislator Cahill, but the chair Bartels is pretty much no way I'm ever going to support extending this. Right. But
sounds
I will
like
support the postponement.
I'm going to withdraw my postponement because it's not going to pass this committee next month, and no matter what happens.
You withdraw your second?
No, I'm thinking tactically.
Well,
there's an argument to be made for
to withdrawing your second.
Hmm?
There's an argument to withdraw your second.
Yeah, there's an argument for keeping my second, too, but I'll defer to the... to the sponsor, whatever you want to do.
I'm going to withdraw my postponement.
And I'll withdraw my second.
Okay. Back to the resolution at hand. All those in favor? All those opposed?
I'll be in favor.
Whoops.
Yeah.
One in favor. Opposed? Motion defeated. Thank you. Resolution 435, dedicating funding to boost for Main Street programs. Can I have a motion?
Where are we?
14. 14. 14.
Yes, I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
I'll second it for discussion. I first of all want to thank Director Weedman for his work on this, and just to say, you know, there's a thorough presentation. I missed the last ARPA meeting, not today's meeting, but the previous meeting. I'm not going to be in support of this. I feel like we're getting down to the wire in the funding. I'm concerned about giving such large grants to select few businesses. The other aspect of the program, the Main Streets portion, I feel a little more comfortable with, but I also, as I said earlier, I'd sooner direct this funding toward ag relief or food insecurity or other robust projects. I also want to see what comes out of the for-profit program, which hasn't begun yet, and we haven't started going through those projects. So, you know, once that happens, if there's an argument to be made, I might be moved. But at this moment in time, facing waning funds, I'm not in support of this program.
Yeah, I'm similarly not in support. A lot of it is because we haven't finished the process with the small businesses. So, you know, the whole idea was, I mean, these small businesses are located on Main Streets for the most part. And, you know, until we implement that and support those, it's sort of hard to know what the best next step is. Also, I mean, for me, there, if we are going to dedicate more money to businesses as opposed to food or, you know, the other elements, I just feel like there are some areas that we could be a lot more thoughtful about. You know, like, for example, one thing I'm particularly concerned about is all of the shuttered buildings that we have and what we could do to remedy that. I'm concerned about gentrification. I'm concerned about Broadway not having the businesses that reflect the communities that live in that, and as a thriving street of businesses. So if I was to support development in terms of businesses, I think there are other ways I would rather go than this. So both wanting to see the small business one follow through and see how that's impacting and supporting, plus the fact that this would just not be the target for the, if we're going to do one more business one, I'm not supportive of this in its form.
Mr. DeMone? I think I was the lone no vote in economic development on this, and I said it before, if you're going to give out money, especially real money like this, to a handful of businesses, or make it available, it has to be by industry. It's the only proper and fair way to do it, and open it up to all businesses of a certain industry to have access to those funds. Otherwise, it really is a handout. You can you start talking about $200,000, $250,000. Now you really could put another business literally out of business by giving a competitor of funds like that. Infrastructure, clean water, green energy, water, sewer, roads, bridges, are good schools, high-paying manufacturing jobs. This is real economic development. A handout to 8 or 9 businesses for, quote, amenities is what I heard used in economic development. Just, it's well-intended, but it's definitely not something government should be doing with such discretion. And I think, as the chair says, there's probably better ways to spend a couple $1 million.
Mr. Weidman?
Just to clarify, and I don't know if the backup documentation that was initially provided to the ARPA committee made it to the members of this committee, but as the chairwoman pointed out, there was a kind of set of background information here that I think assisted the ARPA committee as it was reviewing the proposed program and ultimately endorsed the program to move forward. I would just take a little issue with Legislator Walter, Legislator Maloney. I think some of what you described is exactly what this program is intended to do. So, you know, conditions on Main Street and some of our communities have deteriorated since the pandemic. Physical brick and mortar facilities have been a challenge since the pandemic, and investing in those commercial cores to ensure that they remain healthy and vital is essential for a number of reasons, and not just economic development reasons. This is, you know, also known as smart growth principles. These are the kinds of investments that leverage our existing infrastructure, strengthen our existing infrastructure to make sure that our continued growth in the future is focused in commercial cores and not sprawling across our kind of green spaces in the county. So, you know, I think I understand that there are a lot of competing priorities here for the ARPA funds, completely get that. I would just, you know, encourage those that haven't had a chance to take a look at the details of the program to really, you know, look at the breadth of the program and that it is not, first of all, exclusively for businesses. We are making this available to municipalities, to associations of businesses, ultimately focused on two types of investments, one for larger anchor institutions in these commercial cores for whom a $35,000 grant to undertake potentially a $2 million project is really negligible, but $250,000 towards a very large project can help them get that project across the finish line. And then second category is the actual downtown commercial cores. And so, you know, a business association that works in that core to market that core for more visitation, or signage and wayfinding to make sure that residents and visitors can find the services in that core, are examples that were cited in the proposal. So, again, just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Roberto?
Thank you. One aspect that's referenced in the backup and that I remember from the presentation in ARPA that I just wanted to bring up that I do think is critical, that I would like to see us, I mean, this may end up passing the body, but if it doesn't, that I'd like to see us consider, you know, you reference available funding at the state level, like the New York Downtown Program, mm-hmm. et cetera. I think we would really serve our municipalities and our constituency by considering a person. We've talked about this, like the equivalent of a grant writer, someone in the county who can help. You reference it in this project in terms of the award, but I mean on an ongoing basis. You know, my supervisors that I represent call me and ask questions all the time, answers I don't always have. I'll put them in touch with you or someone else. But if we had a dedicated person at the county who was working with municipalities to compete on any number of grants, I think that would be a value add. That would be a shared service that makes a lot of sense. And maybe it's ARPA, maybe it's not, but it's budget time, so I'm saying it out loud because I've thought of it before, and this really brings home the importance of it. You know, I don't want this to take away from the work that you do, Tim, because I think you putting this in is just another, you know, testament to your advocacy and your role, which is exactly right and exactly what I want to see in the person who's sitting in your seat. And it's just, I really do feel like the $250,000 grants, while they're meaningful, you know, I mean, one thing that comes to my mind, for me, it's two things, it's two metrics. It's the waning money that's left and the ability to direct that in from my perspective, the most meaningful way. And the other is that even with businesses being hurt, you know, there's been a lot of money out there from the state, from the federal. There have been programs that, you know, I would hope that if this passes, that among the metric, which I didn't see in there, would be some, and again, I'm speaking in case it does pass the floor, that there would be some metric to confirm that we're not giving money to anyone who's gotten a significant amount of other money for the same, because certainly some businesses made out giant with PPP and with other programs. So if it does, despite my no, if it does make it all the way, I wanted to succeed in the best way possible, and that would be something I would want to make sure it was included in the metric.
I agree with assisting towns more. I always do. I think we should take as much responsibility from the towns as we can. I think Albany wants us to do that as well. I would be for this if it was just open to municipalities in regards to Main Street revitalization. I would be totally open for it.
I would be open to that.
I would be more open to it.
Good to know.
But
I mean, I think this is made it through committee. I would just defer to this committee's decision and the body's decision, but I that's interesting to note, and certainly.
And can I add that, you know, I know right now New Paltz and Ellenville have partnered for community neighborhood Main Street vitalization for the state. So doing this with municipalities would also help them get that state fund, you know, the state funding to see that there's the county support,
so,
and there's other things.
To that point, we're actually working with both Ellenville and writing their DRI and New York Quarter applications. So we have staff that does exactly what you're saying. And I think you're absolutely right that we need to expand those efforts so we can chase every dollar that the state's making.
And it would
available.
Go farther, the state money, if there's also this. So I would absolutely, if this was for municipalities, I would be totally happy. And then they could do the smart thing with it, even if it's just fixing their sidewalks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, many of them that is. They have, I hear from them the desires of fixing sidewalks, putting better lighting in. Let them decide.
Landscaping, lighting, signage.
Yep.
Would that amendment be a substantive change that would make it have to go back through ARPA?
Well, so this was brought
by Legislator Criswell. So, I mean, I think a conversation with him on any amendments would be important. And you know, postponing it for a week, I think, would allow for those conversations to happen.
He didn't write it. He carried it on behalf of the executive.
It was born out of conversations that I think he had a strong, you know, feeling for.
I move to postpone it for a week.
All right, 436, approving the issuance of a contract for $2 million for UCEDA. Motion? Yes. Second? Discussion?
That's the postponement we will need. Yeah. I'll move to postpone that as well.
We can give him the money now, though.
Right. That's the 435.
That's the money.
Right.
I love that it gets quiet over here.
You're like, oh, I'll get the money.
It's not at all. It is an opportunity to respond.
This is turning bright red.
Right.
Second to postponement.
All those in favor?
Close.
So carried. All right, 441, authorizing the chair to execute an agreement with the Office of Victim Services.
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second.
Member of discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 18, Representative 442, amending the 2022 budget to...
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 443, approving the issue of the contract amendment for $100,000 for Industrial Medicine Associates.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
I make a motion to block 444, 445, 446.
There's another one a little later.
Start
with those. 40.
Yeah.
There's one more bus one.
449. 443, 45, 6, and 9.
No, 44.
Three is done.
44, 45, 46.
Is 49
pressing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. On the block. Motion.
Move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 447, approving the issue of a contract.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Aye. So carried. 448, approving the exclusion.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Resolution 450, approving the exclusion of the contract for 979-241 for LaSalle School.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second. Discussion.
So I just want to thank whoever, I don't know if you, Tara did it or someone else. I thought so. Just don't want to be, so I appreciate the changes to Schedule A. I don't know if we have to, oh, we don't have to move it because we have it in front of us before that, yeah. But, yeah, that addressed a lot of issues. It was a bit confusing thinking that it was just going to be 100 kids for the whole time. So that got fixed, that it's not, it'll be up to 400 or 500 kids. And it seemed a little off that they would get an hour a week when in fact they would get close to 120 hours for the year. So thank you for fixing Schedule A. It feels much better to me now.
Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Okay. 451, approving issues of your contract amendment for
5 minutes.
Second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 28, Resolution 452, approving the 2022 resource allocation plan.
I'll move that.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Carried. 454, authorizing the public hearing for possible transfer of real property for Rochester. Second.
I'll second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Discussion. So can I ask, this is something, Dennis, you're here. Are you able to talk about this piece of property?
This is the one on Tobacco Road, Rochester.
Oh,
Tobacco Road. Actually, right next to it.
Then I'm against it.
So yes, I can.
Okay, please. Thank you.
So this is a piece of property that we took back in 21. And the planning department, working with the county executive's office, requested it be removed from the auction for public use. The two things that we were looking at the time a parking facility or a town hall where the existing commercial facility is, and a respite house or affordable housing where there's an existing four-unit apartment building on site. And since that time, the town has indicated that it has, does not want the facility for the area for town purposes. And so in conversations with the Economic Development Office, the suggestion was made that we surplus it to UCEDA and then proceed through a subdivision to save the house for county purposes, for affordable housing purposes, and or a respite house. There is a DEC lien on the property. That DEC lien basically says that we need to offer this at auction at least two times prior to sale. So we'll have to negotiate. We've negotiated that when we pulled it. We had conversations and negotiated that with them relative to that lien, and they indicated that they would not require us to go to public auction as long as it was used for public use and benefit. To the extent that the property now would go to a quote private developer, assuming that that's where it goes, a portion of it was, we'd have to go back into those negotiations again. But the idea of holding a public hearing on this is certainly something that we should do.
Can I ask a question? So is the main intention for the respite home or for housing? And if housing, then is UCEDA the place for it, or is the housing authority the place for it?
Well, if it goes to, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. I'm thinking out loud. You can answer.
If it goes to the UCEDA, the idea of how it gets into housing is, I think, is immaterial. And certainly we can work together with respect to that.
We would be subdivided.
Yeah.
So part of it would stay housing.
Yeah.
And the other portion, which we don't really have a use for as a county, it was an old laundry mat. The reason there was a DC lien is there was the oil spill fund got involved. That's all been taken care of. But it's not really, it's property that would be useful for a private business to start something. Like Rochester wants more of a main street feel in that location, and this is something that I believe they support. The idea would be to do an REI or whatever, or an RFP to find that.
So if I can just chime in, because this is kind of a free-ranging discussion, but there really are two potential uses on this parcel. One is housing, and there's an open question about respite versus affordable versus other kinds of housing. The one that we are keenly aware of now, that the process with the town resulted in the town saying they had no use for the commercial part of the property, is that a couple of local residents and business owners have stepped forward to say that they want to purchase this property. And so this presents an opportunity for this body to decide whether we go the traditional auction route, which is just the highest bidder gets the property, or we go a redevelopment route, sort of like what we've done for Tech City on a much smaller scale, that says, look, the community would like to see this parcel revitalized as part of their downtown revitalization in Accord. And so we can set goals with the community, with the legislature about that redevelopment, and then market and sell this property. So that's kind of the impetus for moving this forward to the step that's proposed tonight, which, remember, is only the authorization of the hearing for the surplus. As Dennis noted, there are steps that would have to be resolved in negotiation with DEC before we actually came back to this body with a resolution to surplus.
And can I just ask, sorry, one more follow-up question? Okay, so that's giving me a little more clarity. But then the other, maybe unrelated to this question, property question, is just in terms of the respite home, since it's on, I'd like to just flag that we get some report at some point where we're looking, where the siting of those are, too. Because I don't know if that's, if you're getting updates in committee, but that's something I think that we probably need to prioritize as well.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about going and looking at a few properties, but that was a
like
while
2 months
back.
Ago. Yeah. Yeah, and I guess also related to whether it's a respite home or affordable housing, does the Rochester supervisor generally okay with either of those and will help in that process?
Correct.
And then this is a building that already exists that you're seeking for respite, and how many bedrooms is it?
Four units. It's a multi-unit building.
Four apartment units, and it's in a historic district, and it is an historic, it's a contributing structure. And a historic district.
So it's not really ideal for the rest of it, but it could be for forced housing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So actually, that just raised the question.
I'm the only one that did that one right, Trey.
Can we see the tax options?
Did I do one?
do we have the ability to put any stipulations on the sale of the property as part of the auction? So, for example,
I know they can't go to like the previous owner.
But I mean, it's going to be a requirement in the bidding that the property must be demoed, that the building must be demoed within 2 years or whatever it is.
I think we should look into that before. Like, I have presumptions, but I think it's better if I just do the research and come back to it. Yeah, let me do that.
Because I think Rochester was my district, but I'm very familiar with that area. There is a downtown business district in Cohonston. It would be better if that was, first of all, cleaned up as a blight, but then the area focus for development is the downtown business district that gets turned into something else, not necessarily highest price or best use, but something. But the focus, that's just my thought on that.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Okay.
Thank you. Ooh. All right. All those in favor? Opposed? Okay. All right. 455, amending capital project 334.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 454, approving the execution of contract amendment
43,019. Wait, what number?
457.
457.
Oh.
Just go with it. 43,918 for Barton and Judas. Motion?
I said I move it.
Oh, sorry.
I'll second.
I got kale in my mouth.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So carried. 461, adopting revised fund balance policy as presented before you. Have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion.
Second for discussion.
Chair Berto.
What was the sponsors here? Could we?
Sure.
Sure.
So I, in reflecting on our fund balance excess and on our severe housing crisis, and on the fact that I think we all philosophically agree with the fund, like that funding in general should be spent on housing, I have introduced this as a mechanism to automatically allocate a portion of our excess fund balance, so the amount that's over the threshold that we've determined in the fund balance policy, to create a fund essentially as seed money during the time of excess fund balance. That is where we can draw from, not necessarily the only place we can draw from, for a variety of types of investment in housing, including housing infrastructure, building housing, partnerships that are of the sort that we've approved in the past, anti-displacement, so a pretty broad range of things. The idea is that all of our efforts around housing fall into all of these categories, so it's not meant to be more restrictive. It's not meant to circumvent the legislative process for the ways that the monies are spent, but it is meant to outline our intention that that's the proportionality that it should be allocated and protected for that purpose. I think the county executive's team, is going to continue to propose policies that would be able to draw from this fund. But I think, the legislature should make it clear that we intend for a significant investment in these types of policies. And so I've introduced this to make it a mechanical process so that it is protected for that purpose. And my hope is that it will inspire a more aggressive housing response by allocating the funding for these types of programs.
So, thank you, and thank you for the work you're doing on this. So at Health Human Services and Housing, we had approved it with the expectation that there'd be some amendments.
Yep. So,
I know I should have read it, but
it's okay. So there's an additional resolved in the packet, so that makes clear that this is viewed as like the initial seed for a fund, that this doesn't have to be the only source. The excess fund balance doesn't have to be the only source that contributes to this. And also the backup, which is the fund balance policy itself, we have adjusted the definition of affordable housing so that it doesn't self-define itself, which I realize is, even the way I said that is probably wrong. But we removed the word affordable from the definition to affordable housing.
And then wasn't there?
Oh, there is. I'm still waiting on feedback from the county executive. I will say this, Legislator Walter, before I give the seat by talking time. We disagree about the notion that our strike through around the commissioner's authority isn't warranted. We feel that it is warranted, and we aren't circumventing his ability to provide a plan for the funds that aren't included in this. And so our position, based on advice of counsel, is to maintain the strike through.
Yeah, the I guess what I was saying was that we had talked about a specific fund that it was going to be tailored to. And you had a name for it.
Well, it was the housing trust fund.
Yes.
Issue. Yeah.
So
not a legally housing trust fund, but basically something.
It's a reserve.
It's a housing trust reserve.
Yeah, and I did review that with counsel, and he advised that the terms trust and fund are both terms of art that we should avoid.
Yeah, no, we wouldn't call it that.
Right. I guess the question is, like, where does the money exactly go? Was whatever you want to call it. That there's an actual place, because, for example, if you said towards tourism, we have a whole department, we know exactly where it's going to go. So we don't have a thing.
Right.
So that was what we were
talking
about.
Yeah, there's not a single, in tourism, it's a department, so we kind of know which department is going to spend it. But in this case, there might be anti-displacement efforts that DSS dispenses or, you know, other, or the district attorney, you know,
sure.
So there's a wide range.
Where does this sit?
How is it? It's an account, basically.
That's called housing?
It's a housing fund. I mean, we aren't specifically naming it. I've been advised not to specifically name it a trust fund.
No, I would. Yeah. So stay away from the word fund, because those are kind of formal words that we use in, you know, state accounting. So it would more than likely be a reserve account that would accomplish the same thing. We have reserve accounts like E911. There's a surcharge on everybody's cell phone bill, and it automatically funnels into the E91 reserve account, and it can only be used for certain purposes by law. And to me, that would be the appropriate way of moving those funds and designating them for the purpose of housing. And it can only be accessed, any reserve account can only be accessed or appropriated from with the legislature's approval. So
is that assumed in this?
Well, if you want to, we could make, I mean, I'm not on the committee, but I would be totally comfortable if you wanted to, I think we could make the, just strike, if you wanted to make an amendment, you could just strike assigned fund balance. So you could strike assigned fund balance and replace it with reserve account.
And then, just to clarify, because you said, and there's rules about exactly how it can be spent.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that then is defined in here, or is that something that comes later?
So this is something that you're defining. So this isn't like, so for the 911 surcharge is specified in state law where that money goes and how it's appropriated. This is something that the legislative body is creating the rule sets for.
And it's assigned in the, so it's listed in the resolves of the resolution itself, but part of the resolution is amending the fund balance policy, and it adds a new paragraph to the fund balance policy defining affordable housing that is similarly broad. So it is defined in here. It's adding a new definition to the fund balance policy.
And then anything that gets spent, we'll see anyway.
Has to come
so, like, if
has
you want to go and buy one big building and spend it all on it.
Yeah, and I even though it wasn't necessary, I did include a resolve to clarify that the existing legislative process is not circumvented in any way by this action.
Okay, are we allowed to spend from it, or only them?
No, we are allowed to spend from it.
Like, we can put in our own resolutions that spend
from it? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Again, the existing legislative process is not circumvented in any way.
Open. So how would this play out with what is going to be forthcoming? Because I just got from Amber the end of last week a draft of a debt management policy, which right now there's the appearance that there's a very hefty fund balance. Yep. However, that will disappear. It will not look as hefty as it is now when we actually, if we adopt the policy and actually start having a capital budget where known expenses instead of borrowing money. I never disagree with Mr. Maloney. That is never. That is usually not the best way to do that. If you have the money, spend it. Don't pay interest if you don't have to. A lot of that will go away. So this won't have
that. That effort will diminish the excess fund balance.
So I guess
this also pulls a one-time allocation from it. So if through our budget process and our the changes that we make to revenue collection and the changes that we make to spending result in the years ahead in less occurrence of excess fund balance, then there will be less money allocated to this fund.
So I
would suggest, and that's why I clarify that this is not, that is not the only place that this fund should draw money from. There might be other places that we as legislators are responsible to.
So I guess my point of that whole saying that is that this would seem to me, and it's just my opinion on it, if people are supportive of this, the better option be to actually create a budget line for this, mm-hmm. rather than saying we're going to take money left over at the end of the day. We shouldn't have money left over at the end of the day. Money should be, taxes should cover known expenses or expenses that we're going to do, and then allocate those expenses to those projects.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have such a healthy fund balance.
No, I tend to agree, and I think in the future that might be what we see instead. I view this as a temporary thing. This is why I'm introducing it now, because I do view it as a fleeting moment to draw from the excess fund balance and to capture part of what we closed this year with.
I also applaud the effort and the work and am grateful for it. You know, I just want to say that I do feel the absence of the Department of Finance at this meeting. This is not a new thing. This has happened over time. And this is something I would want to hear from the Department of Finance, both in terms of the timing, like when is the money, like it says that commencing with December 31, you know, we're going to take that one pull, but like at what point, I would want to know at what point everything gets closed out and at what point that would be, that number would be pulled. So just as a general point, I'd like to have the Commissioner of Finance at these meetings. I think we need the Commissioner of Finance at Ways and Means, as a general. Are there other changes that we're anticipating, like legislative alternates?
Well, we just talked about one.
Yeah, if you want to make the amendment to replace assigned fund balance in the penultimate resolved with reserve account, I would be on board with that. And then I will say that I do have a hunch that I'm going to get some changes requested from the county executive's team.
Can we wait a week? Can we postpone for a week?
Would you be cool just making this amendment? Well, I guess it wouldn't make sense because then you wouldn't pass it. All right. So yeah, you can, if you want to wait a week, I totally understand.
And it'd be helpful to know the dates are to that point of what the right dates are that we would even.
I'm comfortable with that. This is not intended to be done hastily, but it is intended to be done expeditiously.
Legislator Erner. Legislator Erner, then Executive Ryder.
Thank you. As the co-facilitator, legislator, you should tell on the working group that has talked about this. I just wanted to share that the group didn't pose any objection to it when we brought it to them at the last meeting.
I was just going to say that I have spoken to the Commissioner of Finance, and he is going to attend these meetings. There was a family conflict tonight, but moving forward, he will be in attendance.
So we're going to dump. We're going to take $10 million from this year's budget. Is that what that says at the end of the year? $10 million
from the excess fund balance.
From the excess fund balance at the end of the year, and then 25% of the unassigned fund balance over the recommended 10%. Correct. Every year going forward, it's going to add up quickly if the budget is.
Potentially. We're from 2020 until today, we've gone from actuals of $128.5 million in sales tax receipts to in excess of $160.
Yes.
It's nothing short of extraordinary times when you're experiencing a $40 million potential growth in sales tax, your biggest revenue. So this is not normal. We don't know what those trend lines are quite yet if you're jumping those large percentages like that. In most years, not to say that, I can get you the actuals of what our general fund balance was, but we're usually within the range. Mm. To be in excess of 15%, if that's what we're going to call policy, is a rarity.
Okay.
So what we're experiencing now is extraordinary.
So on a routine year, a million or 1-2 million, something like that, is that a realistic number?
On any given year?
On a routine year.
We're way over that now, but no, not traditionally.
Not traditional.
Traditionally, we're not that much higher than what a fund balance policy would be. Was 5 to 10. I think we've extended it now. So to be in excess of even 15, which
this
is...
This says excess of 10. So
in excess of
10?
So being at around that 12-13% is not uncommon.
So we'd be looking
so
at
it would take a
25% of that.
25% of your overage would be designated for housing.
Right, so
correct.
It'd be 500,000 for that number, right?
Correct.
If I did the math correct.
Correct. Yes.
And so we're starting with a bankroll of 10 million, though,
yeah.
Right? And my question to you, to the executives team, is that a huge impact? I mean, $10 million is not chicken feed, right?
It'll be a decent impact.
I think in terms of, so in 3 weeks, we'll be presenting the executive budget, which certainly will recognize the situation we're in with both the fund excess fund balance,
mm-hmm.
but also the priorities,
mm-hmm.
and those haven't changed
mm-hmm.
In terms of housing being
priority, yeah, right.
as high as it can be, because
right.
it affects every other service
mm-hmm.
that we provide.
I think
without tipping the hand too much,
no, it's fine.
It seems to be in line with prioritizing housing as a real policy priority area. I think it's part of every discussion, whether it's substance use disorder, whether it's people on services, whether it's people trying to work, it always comes back to housing.
It's the bottom line.
It's the bottom line.
I hear
so, yeah, I think this number respects that.
Thank you.
So somebody want to make a motion to postpone the week? Second.
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Court 62 approved from the execution of the contract for 505. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carry. 463, Disney House County Tourism.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second. Sorry.
Opposed? Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
464 approving the estimated contract for $81,000 for Center of Public Safety Management. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. 465 authorizing the chair.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Okay. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Yeah. We lost.
Yeah, we're the three of us.
No,
we still have a
partner.
We have Brian.
Three.
Yeah.
We're good.
All those in favor?
Sorry.
460? Mm-hmm. Yeah, 460. Authorizing the chair.
Wait, did we do 467?
I checked
it, but I could
have
just been checking.
I don't recall 467.
467, I thought we did another 71.
So now Eve.
Authorizing the chair to execute motion for 467.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
468, authorizing the chair. As soon as we're going to make a decision, I'll
move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 469, establishing capital project 646.
Yeah, I'll move it.
Second.
Yeah.
Discussion?
I just want to, 469, 471, and I want to thank the executive team for moving this forward. Very exciting project. Appreciate it. Both putting it in the budget and acting on it, in the capital and acting on it. Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. 471, approving the exclusive contract for 73,570.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 472, amending capital project 488, installation of
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Discussion?
Again, not just because this is partly in my district, but every time these things come up, I applaud them. I think we need to be really thinking about where we can broaden shoulders across this county. We have real serious safety issues on our roads in terms of shared use, walkers, bikers, et cetera, and there have been some serious tragedies, so... thank you for getting this done. It's been a long time coming, and I hope it's the second, third of many, many, many projects.
favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. 473, authorizing right-of-way acquisition for loan 299.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion?
I'll say how happy I am about this.
Yeah. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 474, authorizing the chair to enter into a lease agreement.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 475, Mandy Capital Project 596, Wilbur Bridge. Can I have a motion?
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion?
Oh my gosh.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We're worse than baby.
Oh, yeah, there is. 11 o'clock.
We
use our previous timing. I like that clock, though. That's fantastic. Right there. The clock is right on target. All those in favor?
Aye. I don't even know.
Okay. 477, approving the exclusion contract for $1,387,000.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 478, approving
the I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. 479, approving the execution of contract
I'll
number.
I'll move it.
Okay.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 480, approving the execution of contract amendment for $25,000.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 481, previous contract for $155,500 for Bergman.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 482, previous contract.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 483, authorizing the chair to execute an agreement.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 484, authorizing the chair.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 485, authorizing the chair.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 486, adopting U.S. Information Services Technology Policy.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Discussion?
This is definitely long, long, long overdue. I'd like it so late, but I would like to, you know, hear a little bit from you. But then I'd also like to request that we have a special meeting, really, just to deal with this. It's a substantial policy, there's no doubt that we need to move this forward. I'm sponsoring it. We're going to move it forward, but I think it deserves some real attention from this committee.
Yep.
So, through you, if we can, yeah. Director Macaluso.
Go ahead.
Sure. And I certainly expected that we'd have to have some discussions around this, but this is very comprehensive. I mean, when you look at the previous security policy, 23 years old, and things have changed dramatically, obviously, and just to put it into context, you know, the risks of what the county is exposed to is real and significant. And by establishing this real comprehensive policy, it kind of gives us some teeth to really get our arms around, you know, the risks that are out there, both from external threats, but also internal misunderstandings or clunky ways around our uses of technology, and I think it's long overdue. Case in point, some of the risks that are out there right now. I mean, Suffolk County just suffered a ransomware attack that took down their entire public safety system, their email system, all their web properties, Twitter, you name it, was turned off because of the risks that came. That were exposed from that ransomware attack. So the thing again, coming back to sort of putting some teeth around what we can do to protect the government infrastructure, but also personally identifiable information, HIPAA information, et cetera, and create a really robust sort of rules of engagement that we can use to really manage a increasingly complex ecosystem. And then I lost the train of thought, but it is significantly long overdue. I wait your inputs.
Thank you. I mean, there can be no doubt that 21 years in this, and it's light years. I mean, 21 years ago, we were using entirely different technology and.
Probably still the AS400. So.
So, can I have one more point? Just because I think that the previous security policy had technology defined in the policy. The new policy, the goal of the policy to be flexible, because things change
so quickly
behind the scenes. Technology changes, software changes, systems change, but the rules of engagement should still be the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the new policy kind of gives us some flexibility to say, if the underlying technology changes, we go from, you know, two-factor authentication to biometric authentication, we don't have to update the policy, because the policy is flexible enough to accommodate new kinds of, you know, access control methods or data handling methods or other things, so that we don't have to go revisit this every few years, but it'll be flexible enough to kind of keep us to be useful for the next, you know,
well,
for an extended period of time without having to revisit and rewrite it.
If I can say, you know, I know that the legislature some years ago hired an outside consultant to do an investigation coming off of an internal information services issue, and that finding, which I don't know if you've looked at, but that finding referenced the antiquated nature of our own policy and the need to update the policy, the desperate need to update the policy, in addition to other things. So I look forward to a meeting maybe where you can walk us through the details and the presentation. That'll be up to the chair of the committee, but I think it's deserving of time. I appreciate you bringing it forward. It's something that we should have been pushing some time ago, so here we are, and
no,
now
I'm
is the future.
I'm happy to have those discussions.
Yeah,
and,
so.
Yeah, just, I mean, I want to spend a good time.
Okay.
What's wrong with right now?
Yeah.
You put a PowerPoint together.
Listen, can I make a motion to postpone 1 month? Then in the interim, we can figure out even more.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
Second.
I live for crypto.
Second.
Thank you. Discussion on postponement. All right. Just one thing. Did the compliance officer look at this as well? Do you know?
Sorry?
The compliance, did they look at this policy? Okay. If they could just look at it and also just, if they email you some comment, that they have no comment, that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, those in favor?
These ones aren't all. This is part of
our security officer on the compliance committee.
I want the compliance officer just to.
Yep.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Adopt.
So carried. Thank you. 487, authorized in conveyance of county property to original owners.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 488, accepting new county.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Stretch here. 489, authorizing the U.S. County Commissioner of Finance to accept the redemption offers.
Second.
Second.
These are checked.
Second.
Second.
No discussion. All those in favor?
Pull fast.
Opposed? Carry. 490, setting a public hearing. Second.
Someone second.
I'll second.
Discussion. All those in favor? Favor? Both?
Aye.
So carried.
Yeah,
all right.
I
and we have a forthcoming resolution of surplus revenue.
No control report?
she had to leave, but she will be for next week. She will have a...
I hope no one...
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second?
Discharge in a gas tax.
No.
These in person meetings.
All those in favor?
See what happens?
Aye.
Opposed?
Eve. Adjournment. Eve.
Second, third, fourth.